my calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 113 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And we've got a massive show for you again today. I do feel like I say that every week now.
Well, I mean, you know, when it's a big one, brag about it.
Yes,
and
I
they
do.
Always do say the bigger the better.
Yes, they do.
So yeah. That's good. And something I've never heard anyone ever say before.
Shall we get out of this sticky mess by telling them what's coming up on the show?
Graydon, Ben, come on.
Why not? So we're going to start the episode with our top three road movies. If it's a movie and it's on a road, it qualifies.
That's huge. But even bigger is our rewatch this time. Back to the Future.
Oh, wow.
I don't need to actually say much else.
No, and how have we not done this already?
I don't know. Sometimes, you know, when you think, oh, we surely have done it, and we haven't. I think it's because we had the T-shirt out with the logo on. We've done it, but we haven't. No. So now we are.
Cannot wait. Our main review is Oscar hopeful Green Book. It's up for a lot of awards.
Yep.
Could
it
do
is.
Well.
It is.
And you'll hear our thoughts on that later on in the show.
Interesting. We're going to be embarking on the third and final round of our quiz show, Namie Lee Curtis. It's going to be me versus Mark, and let's hope we get at least 1 point each.
I wouldn't bet on it.
No, me neither.
This time round as well, we'll be masturbating over Tim Burton. Now, he has a lot of stick on these episodes.
Yeah.
But in the early days, he was actually quite good.
Sticky.
Yep.
Rather than stick on.
Idiot.
To be fair, we do need to shower him with a little bit of praise. Yeah. We do just... Yeah. Slaughter him every damn episode.
Yes.
So stay tuned for that. We will also have all the other usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We're going to give away an absolute ton of prizes. And of course, we will give you our pop culture recommendations of the week. I really want to get into this because the quicker we start, the quicker we're talking about Back to the Future.
Yeah!
So let's get started.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Well, we're going. We don't need roads.
It's topic time. We're going to kick things off with our top three road movies. We haven't done this one before, so that's why it's the topic on this episode. So let's get cracking on with it. Mark, I'm going to throw this one to you. First, hit me.
I just want to say now, I'm not going to pick Almost Famous, because I've talked about it to death.
Good.
But obviously, it would make the top three.
Yeah. I had money on you.
And can we just identify that Gemma said, we haven't done it before.
That's
so
right.
We start going to redoing
That's
topics
right.
soon.
We might bloody have to. It will get to the point where we might have to.
Just want to emphasise that to the good listeners.
Well, back to my first one, it's Sideways.
Ooh.
Oh, very good.
Which is a great film. The reason I picked this, and I was actually surprised, is back in 2004, Empire gave us their Movie of the Year. And I was a subscriber at the time. I loved the magazine. I thought it was great before it went downhill. I bought it and I couldn't believe there was this film I hadn't heard of had made their Movie of the Year. So I went and checked it out and I thought, oh, this doesn't sound great. Two men on the road. They're going across California to all these wine sanctions and all these different places.
Wine sanctions.
That's
don't know what that means.
I don't know.
Don't know what a wine sanction is, Gemma.
I don't know, but I hope there's enough for everyone.
And I just thought to myself, this doesn't sound great, but I was very, very wrong. And this film is absolutely awesome. Like, genuinely one of my most watched films since that day. It's absolutely awesome. Have you both seen it?
I have once, many years ago.
Ditto.
Right, well, the leading roles are your two main guys. You've got Paul Giamatti, who plays Miles, who is an awesome actor, and one of, in my opinion, one of the most underrated actors.
Agreed.
But even more underrated is Thomas Hayden Church, who plays Jack. And we know him as Sandman.
Of course.
We do.
Arguably his greatest role.
But these two have great chemistry, and it's a really, really... beautiful film because it's shot in California. So you have these beautiful backdrops. They go to these different wineries to try all these different wines.
Well, there's sanctions on them.
But the film is about the two of them having a relaxing week before Jack goes off to get married. And he wants to have a big bit of fun. They want to go out, drink, and just forget about all the commitment and all the crap that's going to come their way. And these two are the most opposite of people you could ever imagine to be together. They're literally, one's happy, upbeat, going out, getting on the lash, wants to go out in the pool.
Lads, lads, lads.
Yeah, and then you've got Miles, who is very depressed, very sad. But the two of them gel. There's this kind of weird kind of, it just works for each other. And I do believe this film honestly deserved an Oscar. I believe that Paul Giamatti was completely robbed because the emotions he shows in this film is brilliant. It's a bit depressing as a film because you see this side of him where you're like, he just turns to drink and he never really makes it. He never gets the girl. His book never gets published. It's heartbreaking. But there's enough humour in there to keep it lighthearted at times. And it's a really good, fun film.
I think it was the film that really made Paul Giamatti's name. He'd been working steadily for years before that, but this was the one that got his name out there, and then he started to appear in more bigger things.
Yeah.
Were both he and Thomas Hayden Church nominated for Oscars for this? I've got a feeling they were.
I don't know, honestly, but I don't believe they were, which sucks. Aww. And it isn't right.
One of them was, I'm sure of it, but...
Okay.
we'll look it up another day.
But yeah, the soundtrack's great, Gemma. You'd love the soundtrack. It's really hoity-toity.
Brilliant.
That's you all over, Gem. Hoity-toity.
Ms. Hoity-toity to you.
But yeah, I do genuinely think it's a fantastic film, and it's a film I never get bored of watching.
Isn't Sandra Oh in this?
Yes.
And she's awesome.
She's very, very cool indeed. And it will be a future rewatch at some point.
With,
I think we should get like a winery. If we could have some winery.
Are we friends with any winery?
I don't know. Maybe Lime Bay.
Lime Bay Winery.
If they sent us a big crate of wine, we would then do this, and it would work. And it wouldn't be like we're just trying to sell out.
Yeah. Also, could they pay for a trip across California for us?
That'd be pretty good. Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Sideways too. That'd be amazing.
Go on, Ben, you'll go.
I'm starting with 1994's Dumb and Dumber.
Me too, I got it.
You got it as well. Yeah. Oh, fantastic. It is, of course, the classic Farrelly Brothers comedy about two dim-witted friends, Harry and Lloyd, on a cross-country road trip to return a briefcase to its owner, not realising it actually contains a ransom for the owner's kidnapped husband. When I was at university, this was our go-to movie. We had it on VHS in our flat, me and the lads, and... whenever we'd go out and get pissed up and then come home, we'd be drunk, we'd be cracking open the beers, and we'd put this on. We'd then wake up the next day hungover and we'd want to throw something on. We'd put this on. We once went on a holiday. You know, the Sun used to do those holidays where you could pay a pound?
Oh, yeah. Like in a caravan.
Yeah, exactly. We went to Great Yarmouth and we were in a caravan for, I think it was like a long weekend, and we took a VHS and a copy of Dumb and Dumber with us so that we had that to watch when we were drunk. We were obsessed with it. And there was a point, I think, where I could have written out the whole script.
Oh, right.
I could just sit there and do it. Piece of piss. As the name would suggest, it's a gloriously fucking dumb movie, isn't it? But it's the most smart, dumb movie you'll ever see. It's so beautifully written and so beautifully constructed. And, just think of some of the scenes and some of the elements of it. Think of Jim Carrey making the most annoying sound in the world.
Oh,
which
God.
Which I'm not going to do here because it
won't
deafen our listeners. Or think of Jeff Daniels getting his tongue stuck on the ski lift. Come on. Or just the two of them driving around in the Mutz Cuts van. Just every little part of that film just fills me with joy. And I could sit here and quote loads of things from the film, and I won't. The only small quote that I want to use is probably my favourite line in the whole film. It's when Harry and Lloyd are on the little moped, and it's absolutely freezing, and Harry needs a piss, and he's behind Lloyd. And Lloyd says, "Just go, man." And then he pisses up his back, and then looks on their faces of just relief and warmth. Oh, God alive, I love that film.
Oh, me too. The scene that always kills me is when they're in the Mutz Cuts vans and they get pulled over by the cop on the bike. He says, what's that you got there? You got a little booze? Sucking on grandma's old whiskey? And then he inadvertently drinks Lloyd's piss.
Yeah.
Well.
And it's the face that the cop pulls when he's sort of... Yeah. So good.
So you're staying, there's still a chance. That's one of my favourite moments. It's one of the most quoted films. And back then, literally, Jim Carrey could do nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Very true.
Well, 1994 was Jim Carrey's year. This is when he released this film. He also released The Mask and The First Ace Ventura. Yeah. All in one year.
Yeah, triple threat.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ever going to be an actor that's going to do that again.
No.
Possibly
Maybe Corey when he did Lost Boys 7, and 6 and 5.
Corbin Nash 2.
All in one year. But that film's so quotable. I still love it now. I'm just annoyed they brought out the sequel. It wasn't great.
We're not going to talk about the sequel or the prequel.
Never happened.
They did not occur.
But what I love about this film, it kind of goes against the grain of what a road movie should be. Mm-hmm. Because when you've got characters on the road going to their destination, they find a little bit more about themselves and they learn something and they reflect and move on with their lives. They learn learn nothing in this
nothing,
film.
Not one thing.
They don't even go onto the Hawaiian Tropic bus. Instead, they just walk all the way back to Rhode Island. Idiot.
They are absolute plums. Something I read the other day, which I didn't know. Do you know who the original cast was going to be? Or this is who the Farrellys wanted to cast.
Okay.
Nicolas Cage and Gary Oldman.
Take my money.
Do you know what? I'd love that.
That would have been a significantly more intense version of the film, I think.
Can you imagine them singing Mockingbird to each other? Jesus.
I can't imagine it now, could you?
No.
I want
no.
to.
But and
I
they would do it.
Yeah.
Of course they would.
Definitely fucking Nicolas
Cage.
Cage
would.
Yeah. Poor bastard. He might do the third one. If Jim Carrey's not, can't be arsed. Yeah. Like, oh, it's too good for me now. He'll do it.
Nick Cage is Lloyd Christmas.
Yeah.
Mark, back to you.
So in the late 90s, we had this huge amount of comedies that were coming through, American Pie, all this. This one I felt was overlooked, Road Trip.
You know what? I love this.
And I think it's a great film. And again, like Ben just said, he used to get drunk to the these movies like Dumb and Dumber. This was my one. I thought it was hilarious. At the time, everyone was talking about American Pie. And I was like, fuck that. Watch Road Trip. It's much better. You get Stifler, you know.
You
he's
do.
There again. It's a funny, funny film. I think Tom Green in this film is hilarious. In some stuff, I'm like, ugh, he's too Tom Green. Yeah. In this, he's basically telling the story of the film. And it really is that simple. It's a road trip. They go from one continent to another to help his girlfriend not discover a sex tape that he's took part in. It's that simple, the concept. But these guys aren't doing much now that are in the film. So we had, is it DJ Qualls? Is that how you say
DJ Qualls,
Kyle, he's the real skinny guy.
He's done a bit of TV, I think, in recent years.
But I loved him in this. He was hilarious. He was this really kind of, he was a virgin. He was very scared. He was very nervous. And I just thought this guy could go on and do more.
He looked like a baby bird.
Yeah. There's a guy called, I have to write this down. I want to say Paolo Constantino, who played Ruben.
Paolo Constantino, I think it
close,
is.
Close.
No, it's Paolo Costanzo, I
there
think.
There we go.
And the only thing, the only other thing I remember him from is he played, I think it was Joey Tribbiani's cousin or nephew in Joey,
that's
the TV
where I knew
series.
Him from. Yeah. But he was cool in this. I thought, again, why did he not go on and do stuff? And then is it Brecken Mayer? Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Who's Josh? Who's great. And
he
I loved
in
him
Clueless.
In Clueless.
Yeah.
But again, he should be doing more. He was an icon back then. I remember him in Clueless thinking, he's the coolest guy in the world.
He was in a TV show a few years ago, like something with law.
It was the one with Zach Slater. From, Zach Morris from,
Saved by the Bell.
I know the one,
But
I can't remember what it's called. Franklin and Bash.
Yeah.
That's what it was called. Franklin and Bash.
Of course.
That sounds like something Corey would be in. But there's a couple of scenes in this that really, really make me laugh. So there's a scene where Kyle complains about his powdered toast.
Oh,
I don't think it's warm enough.
Yeah.
So the chef goes in the back, starts rubbing it up his ass crack, rubbing it around his crotch, and it's grim. It's so
Doesn't
well
he
done.
Throw it in the air and he catches it in his pants.
It's absolutely hilarious. And the second scene, which I don't know why it always makes me laugh, but I'll always like spit my drink out laughing, even though I know what's coming. The car goes over this bridge to try and survive, and as it like lands and blows up, Stifler's character turns around and goes, I give it 5 minutes till our first ass raping. And the way he says it, I don't know why, but it always makes me laugh. And I've seen it so many times, but it's just a great film. Tom Green is good. He's hilarious. When he's feeding the mouse, we've all seen those iconic scenes. He's the narrator all the way through, telling this story to these group of freshers. And I just think it's a really good, silly film.
I shouldn't admit to this, but I used to watch this film quite a lot as well when I was at uni again.
Me too.
And Sean William Scott, or Stifler as Mark calls him, because he refuses to acknowledge his actual birth name.
Yes.
But Sean William Scott, he had a very particular fashion sense in this film. He used to wear Adidas tracksuit pants, but with kind of like a check shirt. And I just thought that was the coolest combo. So I used to walk around Sheffield when I was at uni in Adidas pants and check shirts.
As Stifler.
To copy Sean William Scott in the film Road Trip.
He's just told this to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And on the next episode, when we put out our episode 114, done, Ben will be wearing that exact outfit. But yeah, I'm glad you both love it, and it's something that I think if you're ever down in the dump, just whack it on, because it's just silly, stupid, good toilet humour, and you'll just have a blast. It's about an hour and a half, and you will just laugh your ass off.
Mm-hmm. Perfect time.
And if you don't, you're dead inside.
Ben?
I'm going with 2000's Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh,
nice.
Yeah, it's a Coen Brothers film, obviously, very loosely based on Homer's The Odyssey, and it's the story of three escaped criminals in 1930s Mississippi as they try and evade the law to find a buried treasure whilst encountering all manner of bizarre situations like getting involved in a bank heist, exposing the Ku Klux Klan, and becoming folk music stars. It's an utterly bonkers film, and I think it's one of the Coen's best. It wasn't really rated as one of their best. I don't think it did particularly well at the box office. I think the critics were kind of lukewarm to it, but I think it's a magnificent film. And a lot of that is down to the casting. The cast includes a lot of Coen Brothers regulars. So you've got John Turturro, Tim Blake Nelson, and John Goodman. But the masterstroke was casting George Clooney in the lead. Clooney is so good in this, and he was red hot at the time, so he was just coming off the back of critical successes like Out of Sight and Three Kings, and as always, he's just so ridiculously charming and funny, like he is in everything. Absolutely adore this man.
He's a lovely lad,
isn't
he?
He's a bloody lovely chap.
Is he to you what Ryan is to me?
No, because the feelings aren't sexual, Mark. it's more of an admiration.
Yeah.
The love I have for Clooney is the love that a man has for a fine Cuban cigar.
Oh.
The love you have for Ryan Gosling as well.
It's the love that dare not speak its name. Yeah. Love, yeah.
A constant subscriber of Pornhub.
Oh, right, Gemma, what's she doing?
Ruining
it. She's lost it.
I've seen her drawings.
Can we go back to the film, please?
Yes.
The film, it's really, really silly and over the top. And at times it feels like a live-action cartoon. And the Coen Brothers thing that feels most like this, I would say, was the title segment from The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Wow.
The kind of the feel of that reminds me of Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? And, of course, both films star Tim Blake Nelson. The film looks amazing. It's a gorgeous film to look at, and that is due almost entirely to the fact that the cinematographer is the great Roger Deakins.
Oh,
hail.
My hero. And what he's done is he's put this kind of sepia tint on the lens, so the film always looks classical, it looks old-fashioned, it looks vintage, which is perfectly in keeping with the fact that it's set in the 1930s. It's an absolutely gorgeous film to look at. And as I say, I think it's a film that gets kind of forgotten. People tend to talk about Fargo and The Big Lebowski when they talk about the Coens, but they don't talk about this enough. Now, I presume you've both seen it.
I haven't.
Haven't.
What?
Yeah. No.
I was wondering why you were being quiet. Yeah.
Honestly, it's...
Neither of you have ever seen Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
No.
Okay. Right. There have been many, many things that I've said on this show and you haven't seen, and I've gone, you know, you need to go away and watch this. This has to be your homework.
Okay.
In the next fortnight, you need to go away, not for my sake, but for your own sake as movie fans. You need to go away and watch Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? It's fucking brilliant.
I'll actually do this, yeah. Mark.
I'll do it if Ben watches Tremors.
Fuck off.
That's a good deal.
It's not a good deal.
It is.
Not on my side of the equation,
is it? Tremors
not.
Is basically... I can't try and oversell
it. You know what?
It.
If anyone didn't understand Brexit, this is exactly what Brexit is. That example.
Yes. That's the only time we'll ever mention Brexit on this podcast.
Done.
But I will watch it. I know it's supposed to be incredible. I don't know why I haven't.
I thought you'd seen pretty much all of the Coens films.
Pretty much all of them, apart from this one.
How long?
I wanted to save it for episode 113 when we were going to bring a topic up and then announce I'd never seen it. But I'm surprised you haven't as well.
I know, slip the net. My other half always bangs on about that I should watch this, so I will do this.
Extraordinary.
I promise.
Yeah,
promise.
Extraordinary.
We can still surprise you.
Yeah.
You look like, we look heathens to you now.
I'm shell shocked.
Yeah.
Yes.
And annoyed mainly.
Yeah.
But
scum,
how great is it for the first time I get to see it?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
There we go.
Everyone keeps going, oh, you haven't seen Dead Man's Shoes, but there'll be a day I get to. And that day will be a nice feeling of like, I've finally done it.
Like, release.
Okay. Yes, I will watch it, and I'll tell you what. Because the listeners are listening, in 2 weeks' time, I'll come back and I'll tell you what I thought. In a 1 second segment, but I'll commit that to you.
If that happens, I'll drink a pot of piss.
Oh my God! On the episode. Well, yeah, we're setting ourselves up now. Come on then, Jem.
Let's save us. My second choice. My second choice is 1988's Rain Man.
Oh,
very good.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So the story stars Tom Cruise as a yuppie called Charlie Babbitt, who's informed that his dad has died and he's left a large sum of inheritance to his autistic brother Raymond. Now, he essentially kidnaps him, which of course is very, very bad. Nobody should ever have to do that. But he takes him on a road trip to the West Coast to try and get a bit of the money for himself. However, what follows is the story of brotherly love is far more important than dollars and cents. So this is probably one of my favourite examples of what a classic American road trip movie should be, because it helps develop and flesh out the characters who seem very one-dimensional at the beginning of the film but are actually far more developed towards the end of the film. And it's kind of like serendipity plays a part, because Charlie's flight back home never happens because his brother has all of these fears about going on flights and having a difference of schedule, so therefore they have to go back into a car to drive all the way back home. And it gives the chance for the brothers to really bond that they never really had. So, of course, with the People's Court and his fears just going out of control, they slowly learn to work together. And Charlie eventually realises that it's not all about the money. Raymond shouldn't be defined by his autism. He should be defined the fact that he's his brother and he loves him. And I just love how road trip movies can change developments for that.
Yeah, very good. I've not seen this film in years, man.
It's worth another check out.
It's another one of those that used to be on ITV every weekend.
Yeah. ITV2, 10 o'clock, Friday night.
I've never seen it.
There we go.
Wow.
Another one.
I know, because I know it's great, but all I ever see is the clips of like, oh, 27 matches and all that. That scene I get seen all the time.
Or when he's in the casino with the
always,
suit.
Yeah. Yeah. But I've never actually sat and watched the whole thing.
So this is the time when Tom Cruise was a real deal actor. You know, he was known for his acting ability and not for his stunt work and jumping on sofas and being part
mental.
Of a weird cult and all
oh,
that.
Yeah.
Sorry, I mean religion.
Yes.
Etc. But, you know, people really, really cared about him and thought of him highly as an actor back then.
Also, Dustin Hoffman.
Magnificent.
Delivers a performance of a lifetime. And I think you would really, really enjoy it, Mark.
I know I will. I know. Everyone says it's a classic. It's just another one that another I just will get around to. Yeah.
And it's from the 80s, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, of course.
It's your era.
You've got like really cool like 80s-esque score music that accompanies it. So you'll be like, oh my God, this is the best film ever.
Like Ben said, it's always on telly and I've seen bits. I feel like I've seen the whole film, but only in segments.
Just juxtaposed altogether.
Which is all right. Like make a memento out of Rain Man. Why not piece it together and see how it works?
Well, there you go. Well done.
Well, I know that you two have definitely seen my final choice.
Go on.
It's the absolute masterpiece, Zombieland.
It's on my list too.
This film is great, and it's very, very simple concept. We have this real big, badass, tough guy and a pair of sisters that join forces to basically travel across America fighting off zombies.
As you do.
That's basically the film.
Yep.
And it's absolutely awesome. I want to say now, I think it's probably the best opening scene I've ever seen in a film for credits.
So,
at the start, we get Metallica. Dun-dun, dun-dun, dun-dun. That's a terrible version of it.
Hey, keep going.
Sorry,
keep going.
Metallica. But we have this absolutely awesome editing where we keep seeing all the names coming up and they're just like smashing them with like weapons
all in
and
slow
all on fire and it's you need to see that alone. Never mind the rest of the film, just watch the opening credits because it's so well done. Jesse Eisenberg, he annoyed me because we've seen him now do a lot of crap roles, especially in the DC universe. I didn't see him as
Lex Luthor.
And he's a bit too Jesse Eisenberg in everything he's in.
Yes.
Sorry, he's doing a bit of a stifler, but he is. And he's become that person. But Woody Harrelson, man. I mean, for me, it's one of his standout performances. And he's only wants a Twinkie. That's all he wants in this film. That's all he ever wants.
Yeah.
But he's absolutely exceptional in this film. Yeah. And I think you can't not like him. You have the best ever cameo, and I don't care if I spoil it because most people have seen it. Let's talk about it. Come on, Bill Murray.
Bill fucking Murray. You know what I mean?
We did our best film cameos topic way back in the day.
Yeah.
And of course, I think all of us had this.
And this was the early days for Emma Stone as well. She wasn't big and famous back then. And Abigail Breslin.
Abigail Breslin, well done.
Two of them, absolutely awesome. Mm-hmm. What a cast, those four. A great, great film. Some of my favourite scenes that I have to point out is when we actually get the heel turn from Emily Stone and Abigail. We believe they're these genuine sisters that come on board and are really there for the right reasons, and they fuck them over.
Yeah.
They turn heel. And the best scene for me is when Emma Stone does this wedding ring whole scam to try and get money out of people. She's innocently at this petrol station, pretends she loses her wedding ring, gets some guy, bit flirtation, and basically it's a fake one worth about £1.
Yeah.
Gives them money out the till, and it's just a great, great film. The kills are exceptional. If you think of the death scenes of everyone, the editing, I know I keep on about it, but it's some of the best editing I've seen in film.
I love that whole kill of the week thing that they do. That's really cool.
Because
I'm sure I read once that it was originally going to be a TV show.
Exactly.
And that's how they were going to do it. There was going to be a kill of the week per episode, but they ended up making a movie of it.
Maybe we do that on the podcast, a kill of the episode. What do you reckon? Just randomly kill someone. Yeah.
So it'll last three episodes.
Yeah. Yes.
Brilliant.
Get a side somewhere. But we do have the sequel coming up this year,
yeah.
Zombieland Double Tap. And I think it was earlier on this week, the promotional image was out where it was doing the 10-year challenge that's been hitting social media left, right and centre. And they look so good.
Yeah. They barely have aged.
No, it's scary.
Yeah.
Abigail Breslin's probably like grown 2 feet.
That's it. She's a bit taller and the rest of them look exactly the same.
And you're done. But it's great. This is almost like a reverse kind of journey for them because they're already at the point of their lives where they are. But that's when you're finding out about what their previous life was, and I think one of the biggest gut punches about the whole film is Tallahassee's backstory. Throughout the whole film, we hear him talking about Buck, his dog, and he's absolutely devastated that these flesh-eating bastards got him, but later on we find out it's actually his little boy. Oh God.
Heartbreaker.
Ugh.
It's a gut punch.
It's a real gut punch. Made me cry.
Yeah, it's a great film. It's probably the best zombie film since Shaun the Dead that gets the which gets the comedy and zombie film in itself.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
A topic in itself for us, but Shaun the Dead, that's just... And it's got a great soundtrack.
It's a great soundtrack.
I want to listen to Metallica now.
Always. I'm genuinely very excited for the sequel, to be honest. Usually I'm a bit put off. It always feels like a bit cash grabby, but I don't think this was a popular, big enough film for it to be a cash grab. I don't think they're thinking, oh, we're going to make millions by producing a sequel. Mm-hmm. I think they're doing it for the love of it. So I'm really hopeful.
And Emma Stone does not need any money. She would only do stuff she wants to do. She can do whatever she wants.
Yeah.
Hello, Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm on board.
Jesse probably needs a bit of money.
Well, never mind. Okay, let's close it up. Ben.
Those aren't pillows. I've got to go with Planes, Trains and Automobiles.
Yeah!
It's one of the greatest road movies and one of the funniest comedies of the 80s. It's the story of two strangers played by the dynamic duo of Steve Martin and John Candy, thrown together by circumstance as they attempt to get home for Thanksgiving by any means necessary. It's a classic John Hughes movie when he was at the height of his powers. This is when he was really firing on all cylinders. It's just a catalogue of misadventures. It's not unlike Hughes's work on the National Lampoon's Vacation films, actually. It has a similar kind of structure to those. But the humour comes not just from all the sticky situations our protagonists find themselves in, but it's from the friction between the two. You've got the upright marketing executive played by Steve Martin and then the extroverted loudmouth salesman played by John Candy. And they're absolutely amazing, just bouncing off one another. And it's fascinating watching Steve Martin play the straight man, because he very rarely does. He's usually the kind of manic, eccentric character in films. So seeing him play the straight man against John Candy's eccentric is very different kind of stuff for him. But it's fascinating to watch. You have to have seen this guy, surely. Don't look at me like that, Mark. Don't tell me.
What's it called again? Oh, I'm joking. You know, dude. Yeah, no. Dude, it's 80s. It's John Candy and it's John Hughes.
Yeah.
For me, that's a match made in heaven. John Candy is an underrated actor. Don't get me wrong. Everyone loves him, but no one appreciates him just how great he was.
Yeah.
He makes a film. He made Home Alone. He made Cool Runnings. He made this. He's just a big bundle of love.
Yeah.
You can't not like him. You can't go, oh, he's a shit actor. I don't really like him. He's just incredible.
Yeah.
As much as I loved him, I don't think I would do very, very well on a road trip with him. Like, Steve Martin is so relatable. He's just great on me so much.
Yeah.
It's a shame because you're right. I don't think people give John Candy the respect he deserves. One, because he didn't do that many things before he died.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it's been a long time since he died and people's memories fade. People don't appreciate how great he was. Do you know what's really kind of distressing? I always think of him, I know he died relatively young, but I think of him being significantly older than us. He was only 7 years older than we are now when he died.
That's depressing as hell.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
That makes me think I should put this cider and fizzy pop down and
just
fuck that.
It's going out in a blaze of glory.
Bloody hell. Did you ever see Due Date that was very, very close on?
Yes. I did, actually. Yeah,
that was quite good. I thought that was all right.
Like Robert Downey Jr., Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah,
correct.
Them two worked all right together, but it was in Zach ripoff. It was.
Maybe a dog in it as well.
But oh, yeah.
It's just one of those classic comedies that, you know, if you flick in and it's on the TV.
If you what?
Flicking, Mark.
Oh, okay.
Through the channels, Mark. Yeah. With a remote control,
yes,
Mark.
Thank you.
Disgusting.
And you get to this film, you can't help but stick with it because you know something funny's coming around the corner. It's just one thing after another. Humour, humour, humour. Magnificent.
It's that shot when they're about to die in front of a truck and you see John Candy dressed up as the devil laughing maniacally. Like, ha ha ha.
Again, I miss John Hughes as well.
Yeah.
There's no one making films like him anymore. That much heart and soul into a film, a soundtrack, the feel, everything. You know it's a John Hughes film.
He was able to do something where his films could be quite saccharine, quite sweet, but also quite adult and dirty at times as well. He had a real way of balancing those two sides.
Yeah. I've not mentioned Uncle Buck.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of his finest roles.
Mm-hmm.
God damn, I'm going to go home and just watch... Sorry, dude. I'm not watching any of these commitments I've gone to today. I'm just going to go home and watch 80s John Candy films.
I knew it.
Fuck Rain Man. Fuck him up, his stupid ass. But yes.
No need for that.
Rain Man, DTU. Poor Rain Man.
That's a bit much.
Blimey.
So, yeah. But let's hear what social media came up with.
I'm interested to see what social media came up with, actually, because Mark was an absolute Nazi on social media.
What happened?
Because a couple of people asked him and said, you know, does it have to be films where they're on a road, or can they have travelled by plane or by bus, you know, or other forms of transport? Mark's like, no, it has to be on a road. It's a road movie. No, it doesn't.
Right?
Road movie. Road movie is a catch-all term meaning something where there's travel involved, essentially. And you're like, no, they have to be on a road. It can't be on a plane. It can't be on.
I was in a grump that night because I think I couldn't get any takeaway and had to cook. I was furious.
Don't take it out on the listeners.
I know. I love them all normally, but I did reply with a lot of gifts to most of them. But on that day, I was like, oh, fuck off.
Oh, dear. Well, I'm going to say what the listeners on social media land said. So we are going to Twitter first and foremost. So David Thomas at Diddy King 1 said, almost famous.
Yes.
Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Oh, Christ.
Brilliant.
Sequel coming soon.
Yep.
Whoa. Planes, Trains and Automobiles for the
great
third
choices.
One. Robert at That Robster said Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah.
We're the Millers.
That film is all right, actually. It's underrated. That
all
film.
Right is about the right.
Yeah.
And finally, The Fundamentals of Caring.
Haven't
anybody
seen
that
one?
No.
Oh, no.
Never will.
That's homework for you, Mark.
Never going to happen.
Never going to happen. Stuart at From Page to Screen said The Hitcher.
That's a great film.
Mm-hmm. Didn't that come up on our topic last time?
It did.
I think so, yeah. The original's great.
It ruddy did. Cohen and Tate.
I don't know it.
Don't know it.
And Locke.
Yeah.
Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
Daniel Turner at JoePineapple75 said the last detail, 5 easy pieces and Easy Rider. Ooh. Bit of a Jack Nicholson fan there.
Yeah, gone for his classics there.
Good
yeah.
lad. Then over to Facebook, we've got Tonya Jarrett said Little Miss Sunshine.
I'm surprised none of us had that.
Yeah, I thought you might actually.
Yeah. It's probably my fourth.
There we go. Midnight Run.
Oh, an absolutely amazing and highly underrated film.
I think that's future rewatch.
Yeah, big time. I've
never seen it.
You would love it.
Yeah. You would
love
it.
Robert De Niro in a comedy.
Yeah.
It's very good. And not like
Meet the Fockers. Seven.
And also Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yeah.
I love that film so much.
Never seen it.
You should do. Ben Davis said Zombieland.
Of course.
Great.
Eurotrip. Not quite Road
The
Trip.
Sequel to Road
yeah.
Trip.
Wow.
Isn't Vinnie Jones and Matt Damon in that?
Yes, bloody and hell. Yes. And The Road.
Yeah, dark
yeah.
film.
Very much
hard
so.
Hard watch, that is.
Mm. Tiernan Welsh said American Honey, which was quite recent, a few years ago.
Yeah, I haven't
ago.
Seen that one.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Eisenberg or is it Shia LaBeouf?
Shia LaBeouf,
yeah.
That one.
Yeah.
Oh, well. We'll just pretend he's not in it. The Straight Story, again, that's a really good film. Mm-hmm.
Is that the dude who's just on a riding mower?
Yeah, I know
that one.
Wonderful film. And Mad Max Fury Road.
I didn't even think of that. Oh,
yeah.
Shit. Yeah.
That's a hell of a good film.
Yeah.
It's like one of the films where Mark was like, no, it has to be on this road. Mm. It can't count if it's in the desert. It needs to be on a road. We need to have one side on the left and one side on the right where people are driving.
Probably my voice sounds like that. By the way, this is me talking now, not them doing impressions.
He's now turned into Brian's mum from Life of Brian.
He's not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy.
You're not having a road.
Yes.
Of the Romans of Edinburgh. And finally, on Instagram, we've got Graham Clark at Drawn in 1985 said Dumb and Dumber, Into the Wild.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good film. And the soundtrack by Eddie Vedder is worth buying itself.
True Sweetly. Story as well.
Sweetly. And The Road. So thank you very much, guys. Keep them coming as always. Lovely.
Whose topic choice is it next?
That's me. So way, way back on episode 27, our topic was top 3 directorial debuts, and it was a really good topic. So next time round on episode 114, we're going to discuss our top 3 acting debuts.
Ooh. Very nice.
And I want to just give a little bit of rules to this, you know.
No roads.
No roads. Got me on a road. It'll take a little bit of research, and we're only considering feature films. We're not talking about like HBO TV movies. We're certainly not talking about TV series. So actors and actresses, their film feature debuts. For the sake of argument, we will include films that were first released on Amazon Prime or Netflix. They will count as feature films.
Okay.
Yeah?
Perfect.
So next time round, top 3 acting debuts. We've been to see Green Book, the true story of Tony Vallelonga, a bigoted working-class Italian-American bouncer who takes a job driving Don Shirley, a pompous African-American pianist, on a concert tour of the southern United States. As the two men from very different worlds get to know each other, they realise that there's more that unites them than divides them. The film stars Viggo Mortensen as Tony and Mahershala Ali as Don, both of whom have been Oscar-nominated for their work. Here is your standard spoiler alert. We will be discussing all facets of the film, of course, including the ending. I'm going to throw this over to you first, Mark, because I know your kind of film taste, and I wouldn't say necessarily this was your kind of film, so I'm intrigued to see what you thought of Green Book.
Well, I'm going to shock you then.
Oh, go for it.
As it stands right now, this is my film of the year.
Bloody hell.
I bloody loved it, mate.
Wow.
I absolutely thought it was phenomenal. I think the chemistry between the two is magical, and I don't really want to say much else because I just want to get into it as a group.
Yeah.
But at the moment, mate, it's my film of the year, and it is only the first week of Feb.
True.
Kind of.
But it's just fucking brilliant.
Amazing. Gemma, thoughts?
I thought it was really enjoyable. Much more enjoyable than I thought it was going to be before watching the film. Great character development with touching and often comedic moments, which I wasn't expecting. And it's a story that, you know, it's not going to try and sugarcoat the horrific views, but it's a film that I think everybody should watch and should give a chance. Really, really great.
Excellent. Well, I agree with you guys wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
I'm under no illusions about this film. It's quite controversial. I understand why. It's quite heavy-handed in places, and it presents a very simplistic, why can't we be friends, why can't we all get along theme, you know. But I don't care.
Yeah.
I actually don't care because it's entertaining, it's heartwarming, it's beautifully acted, and I really liked it.
Should we score it?
I think we've got to start with the acting, haven't we? Because we're talking about two heavyweights here in Ali and Mortensen.
Yeah.
What did we think to their Mark?
So, I've not seen much of Ali in the past.
Yeah.
I have to say Ali, because I'm not going to try and pronounce his first name and offend a lot of our listeners. But let's focus on him, because I've not seen him do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But in this, as this really, what's the word? Like, he's like, he's really posh, well-spoken, elegant man.
Yeah.
Like,
graceful.
He's so, that's the word. Yeah, he's so graceful. And I just fucking loved him. I loved how opposite he is to Viggo Mortensen's character. Mm-hmm. I love how even just doing something as simple as eating some chicken in a car would be such a dirty thing to get his hands dirty.
Yeah. Where'd you put the bones?
And he never really,
throw him out the window.
He never really breaks, does he? He's always this really strong character, very, very mature. Mm. And I found him absolutely awesome, and now I want to see more and more with him in.
Yeah,
I think Mahershala Ali is a gift from a higher being because he's utterly charming. He's so transfixing to watch, and
yeah,
I absolutely adore the ground that he walks on. He was amazing in Moonlight.
Yeah.
He's been heralded as one of the greatest things about watching True Detective Season 3, mm-hmm, and this film, he just brings so much class and regality to Dr. Don Shirley. I just think he's a wonderful, wonderful actor.
He is regality. He is regal. He does come across kingly, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes the film work, is the juxtaposition between him and the more thuggish Tony, played brilliantly by the great Viggo Mortensen, one of my absolute favourites. And I love the way that they spar with one another. I could watch those two spar in a film for hours and hours and hours. I think they're absolutely brilliant. Ali is so aloof and haughty as Shirley. It just proves to me that he can do anything, Ali, because everything I've seen him in, I've never seen him hit these beats. I've seen him play kind of like gangster thugs in Luke Cage.
Yeah,
I've seen him play generic bad guys. I've seen him play, you know, the really sympathetic guy in Moonlight. I've never seen him play this kind of haughty, lofty character. And him alongside Viggo Mortensen, who was magnificent. Because Mortensen's character is presented essentially as a thug and a bigot, but he manages to bring such warmth and humanity to him, especially in the scenes where he's interacting with his wife, played by Linda Cardellini, who I absolutely love.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very hard to humanise that kind of character, and Morgeson does it amazingly.
I don't know what else to say about him, apart from he just surprised me, because we see him as the thug a few times in, mm-hmm, like American... I was going to say American History X. That's not right at all. A History of Violence.
Yes.
There we go.
I was thinking American History X because he's that sort of character that we see him turn.
Yeah.
That's where it comes from, but... He's such a great actor, and again, underrated. He's now become our kind of, I think we could say he's an uncle on this episode now.
We talk about him a lot, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah. We love him.
Like, a cousin, let's call him a cousin.
Yeah.
Cousin
yeah.
Viggo.
We push him a lot, don't we? We really do give him a push.
Yeah, we're putting him over.
He owes us this.
Yeah.
But I think he's underrated, because we don't see him in enough. He does a film now and then, and it's nice now that this is getting the Oscar buzz, and he's getting his name more and more noticed, because he showed in this film... Let's be honest, they carried the whole film. This film's nearly 2 hours and a half. I don't know, it's about 2 hours 15.
It's
them two all the way through.
Yeah.
There's a few other characters, but really, they're keeping your focus for the 2 hours, and that's a hell of a skill.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like how they both bring some different form of energy to the screen. So when Mahershala Ali comes in, he has a very dignified presence, whereas when Viggo Mortensen's character Tony comes in, it's like a car crash. You don't know, it's very chaotic, you don't really know what's going to happen next. And it's the polar opposites of both these characters that work so well together. It's almost like magnets.
Yeah.
It just creates this whole story with a lot more, like you said, a lot more warmth and a lot more human elements to it.
It's fantastic work for the two of them. The thing I was surprised by, and I really shouldn't have been, is I expected it to be an out-and-out drama, but it's actually really quite funny in parts.
Very.
And the reason why I shouldn't have been surprised is because it's directed by Peter Farrelly of the Farrelly Brothers, of Dumb and Dumber, and There's Something About Mary and
Synergy.
Me, Myself and Irene, that kind of thing, you know. So there are scenes, like we mentioned the KFC scene where Don is eating the chicken in the back of the car and he's just never eaten fried chicken like that before, and that's really funny. I like the scene when Don is helping Tony write the love letters to his wife as well.
My heart!
Yeah, they're so good.
A really touching moment for this.
Yeah. But amusingly so as well. It's there's a lot of laughs in this film.
I love when you first hear Tony write the letters. He's like, "We are in a farm. We went to see cows today." It's just, and then by the end of the film, when we start hearing these beautiful sonnets because he's so inspired by Dr. Don, it's just a wonderful way of how him and his wife are brought closer together.
I must say that I think that some of the film stretches credibility. There are certain things that don't ring true. Now, sadly, the real Don and Tony are both dead.
Yeah.
I would love to have seen a documentary with the two of them and actually see what their real-life relationship is like, to see if it was like this. But the bits in particular that I felt stretched credibility is that Tony, one of the first things we see of Tony is a couple of black plumbers are in his house and they drink water out of a couple of glasses. He then puts the glasses in the bin. This is our indication. This is how bigoted he is. He won't even consider cleaning and reusing glasses that black people have drank out of.
Yeah.
2 minutes later, he's best mates with Don. It seemed too much of an easy turn that he went from that that much of a bigot to someone who was best mates.
It's like Big Show at WrestleMania.
Turn.
It was. Yeah. But it was, I didn't really think how quick it happened.
Yeah.
And he was very accepting for someone that, would not even drink out of the glass.
Exactly, threw it in the bin.
Yeah.
That seemed a bit much. And another thing that I thought that was similar to that is the bit when Don has that little gay dalliance with that fella in like a bathhouse and they get arrested. And then Tony comes and gets him away from the police. And it's like, do we really believe that a tough working class Italian-American in that decade would have not been slightly bothered that Don was gay? He'd have just been like, yeah, it's fine. I don't think so. That seems revisionist to me. I don't think that's what it would have been like in that era.
I think so. I think, was it a case of where they were trying to fit so much into the film but have a respectable amount of time to show it?
I think they had to streamline certain things. It wouldn't have fit the flow of the film if there was a big thing about him not liking the fact that he was gay and all this and spent more time gradually figuring out why he was bigoted and no longer isn't. I get why they didn't put that in, but it's just a bit jarring for me and it just seems a bit unlikely.
I think there's probably like a checklist of self-discovery and they have to tick every single box and there was 10. Yeah. And they're like, you haven't done this one yet, throw in gay. All right, cool, done. Yep, perfect. That's definitely going to get an Oscar now.
I loved the music.
Yes.
The music was beautiful whenever Don Shirley was playing on the piano. I was completely just mesmerised. We know that obviously it's probably not Mahershala Ali properly playing it, but at the same time, I was really taken in with how Tony must have felt when he first saw him play. And towards the end of the film, when we see him go into that really cool kind of blues bar, and he just goes into the piano where there's a shot of whiskey and starts busting out this beautiful kind of piece of composition that just takes the whole bar in another way. It's gorgeous.
The music is great, but I kept getting taken out of the music scenes because, as you say, it's not Mahershala Ali playing.
Yeah.
Now, usually what they do in films of this type is they'll just show close-up of people's hands playing the piano, but they wanted to make it look like it was Mahershala. So what they've done is they've CGI-imposed Mahershala Ali's head on top of the person who was actually playing the piano.
Ooh.
And it was noticeable to me because the head jerked around independently from the body, so he looked like some sort of malfunctioning android.
Like and a bladder on a stick.
It just didn't work for me. You could tell that those two things were not connected. It's that whole uncanny valley thing when things are so close to being right, but your brain can pick up on the fact that it's not quite right, and it's disturbing. So I wish they'd have just done close up on the hands and not had the weird jerky android head.
One thing we have to point out in this film, and it's my biggest note here, is the cinematography. I think it was flawless, and it had that kind of filter on it, that kind of grittiness that I remember when I saw Prisoners.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like. It felt a bit like Coen Brothers as well at times, the way it was filmed.
Well, Prisoners and Coen Brothers films are usually Roger Deakins.
There we go. But it was a beautiful tone throughout, and it looked great. And it's got, for me, a rewatch value because I loved the scenes. I was looking at all the background, the lighting and everything, and it looks $1 million. It does look really good. It doesn't look like a low-budget film.
No.
It looks like it should deserve that Oscar nomination. And hopefully it does get the awards because it'd be great to see.
The thing that I found odd is that Viggo Mortensen is nominated in lead actor and Mahershala Ali is nominated in supporting actor.
Mm.
And it's a two-hander with equal screen time. I don't see how they can consider one the lead and the other
racist.
Not. I don't think it's anything to do with that, Mark. I think it's purely vote rigging. It's because if you put them both in the same category, you're going to split the vote and both will lose.
Yeah.
Whereas if you put them in different categories, they're more likely to both win.
Yeah.
It's a cheat for me because they're clearly both joint leads.
Mm-hmm. Although with Rachel Weisz and Emma Stone for the favourite, both are in supporting actresses.
Which again, I think will split the vote. There's no way in hell they will win.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I've pretty much covered everything I wanted to say about this film. I really enjoyed it. Shall we score it?
Yes.
Yeah, let's do it.
Mark?
Well, I'd be stupid to score it really low when I said it's my film of the year, so it's a 9 for me. The reason I like it so much, and I think what makes it so good, is it wasn't too preachy. And most films like this, they're forcing it down your throat. Yeah. Go on, let you go. You've got to be nice to the black man, and the black man's got to like the white man, and all this stuff.
Okay.
It's true. Do you not see that they force it on you, and they make it too much in these films?
I don't remember a film where it was forcing me that you've got to be nice to the black man.
I'm trying to think, and I'm coming up with a blank.
I might search for on Netflix. If Netflix has a category of, you know, when it shows you the categories, films where you have to be nice to the black man.
I'm sure they probably do.
But let's just get to the score, shall we?
Yes.
9 out of 10, which is a hell of a score.
It's great. Well
there
done.
We go.
Gemma.
I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. I think it's a fantastic film, and I think a lot of people are probably going to dismiss watching this because it does have the prestige of being Oscar nominated. However, go and watch it. You're really going to enjoy it. Just for those two leads alone, definitely worth a watch.
Yeah, a good bit of fun. Ignore the controversy. Just go and enjoy how heartwarming and fun and lovely this film is. I give it an 8 as well. So that gives it overall a skip to the end, 8 out of 10.
Give me a tab.
Tab? I can't give you a tab unless you order something.
Right, give me a Pepsi free.
You want a Pepsi, pal? You're going to pay for it.
It's competition time yet again. Do you know what I keep seeing as well on social media? I see other companies, and I'm talking to you, Last Exit, saying it's competition time on your tweets and Facebook comments. And I know you're probably just actually highlighting it's competition time, but I think you're ripping us off. You know what I mean?
Have you copyrighted this?
Yes, I'm going to. If you can't ever use those free words unless you give us some bunts.
Speak to our lawyers.
Yeah, but actually we can't really say that to Last Exit because they do give us stuff. So let's start off with they've given us some more stuff this time. So let's see what we've got in the lucky bag this time. So Gemma, here's one for you.
Ah, nice. Train to Busan inspired.
That's lovely. Cool as well, especially as your recommendation last week. Ben, what have you got?
I've got They Live. Very cool.
And I've got Warriors. Warriors nice. Come out to play. They're excellent. So cool.
Yeah.
And you're probably listening thinking, we don't want to listen to you guys winning stuff. It's not fair.
What?
But don't
Why?
Worry.
Hello?
You'll get the chance as well in a couple of moments' time. But before we get to that, we do need to announce the winners of the last episode. So the first prize that we're giving away was the Twin Peaks t-shirt, which is beautiful. And the question we put out there was, who directed Twin Peaks? So Ben?
David Lynch.
It's true. And James Hill will be getting that on Twitter. And again, I love seeing people that post their photos with them on. Look, yeah. Bloody good. As our rewatch was The Dark Knight Rises, we had the Wayne Enterprises t-shirt. And the simple question we put out there was, who directs Dark Knight Rises? Gemma?
Christopher Nolan.
It's true. And Scott Tucker on email will be getting that in the post. Stan and Ollie, still not seen it.
No,
I might wait for the DVD. I think I might have missed it at the cinema, but it's getting great reviews. We had a t-shirt, a clapperboard, a notebook and some pens. And we said, who plays Stan in the film? So Ben?
Steve Coogan.
Great work. And Andy McGregor on Facebook will be getting that in the post. I love that. I'm a clapperboard.
That'd be
I'll
good,
be walking around clapping
cool.
everything. Yeah. You know what I mean? Pissing people off, probably get punched, but it'd be cool. Also, Alita Battle Angel, our good friends at 20th Century Fox, have given us a laptop decoration, a keychain, not a laptop.
Decoration.
I had to say that because they probably would have thought we'd given away a laptop.
Do you think that's the sound of the clapperboard? Like, laptop.
A tattoo sleeve, some stickers, and a backpack, which is always good. And the question we put out there was, who directs the new movie, Alita Battle Angel? So, Gemma?
Robert Rodriguez.
It's true. And Rachel Brown on email will be getting that. We've also, from our good friends at Universal, got the Mary Queen of Scots bundle, which has a notebook, a mirror, a bag. Margot Robbie plays which character in the film, Ben?
Queen Elizabeth I.
It's true, and Declan Hayes on Facebook will be getting that. How to Train Your Dragon 3 has just come out. It's getting good reviews. There's a bundle which is huge from Universal. It's got a bag, an umbrella, a t-shirt, some pens, a keyring, and it's a real simple question. The dragon in the film is called either Eyeless, Noseless, like Michael Jackson, or Toothless. So Gemma?
Toothless.
It's absolutely right, and Elizabeth Marshall will be getting that bundle in the post. Funko came along as we were doing Dark Knight Rises. We had a Batman and Joker Funko. Really simple question. Who plays Batman in The Dark Knight?
Christian Bale.
It's true. And at Cinema Get, we'll be getting that in the post. Couple more. Oh, it was good, wasn't it, doing Glass? I saw a lot of people were like waving the flag going, good on you guys, you loved it, so did I. Why are people slagging it off? They didn't have actual Funkos for that, but they had it for Split. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was pretty damn good. And hopefully, I think maybe Funko could send us some. That'd be quite cool.
That would be nice.
That'd be lovely.
Would be nice.
The simple question was, who directed the film Glass?
M. Night Shyamalan.
It's true. And Rebecca Robson, which is at Robson_Becky, will be getting those in the post. And finally, I thought it was a good chance to kind of give a reward to those people that spend the time to leave us an iTunes rating.
Of course.
So we said we'd give a couple of Wayne's World Funko Pops because it's an excellent rating.
Oh,
that's how we can tie it in. And at Gunnar Armstrong has said this, and I like this. Skip to the end makes me feel kind of funny. Like when you used to climb the rope in gym school. It's like a new pair of underwear. At first it's restrictive, but then after a while it becomes part of you. It's the choice of a new generation. It's skip to the end.
Wow.
That's nice.
I like
that. 5-star rating, so you'll be getting those in the post.
Cool.
We had a lot of iTunes ratings this
week. We did.
It was bloody good. Keep them coming. Right, should we give some stuff away? Let's whiz through this.
Yeah.
As our rewatch this time is Back to the Future, we have Last Exit to Nowhere give us a Hill Valley High School t-shirt. Let's make it really simple. Who plays Marty McFly in Back to the Future? And I do think at this stage we're probably making the questions too easy.
So, you reckon?
You know what I mean? We also have the Twin Pines Mall t-shirt. Now, let's say Michael J. Fox plays which character in Back to the Future? How's that sound?
Pretty good.
Richard Sounds have come along and given us some Sennheiser HD wireless headphones.
Ooh,
really nice. Good. They're really good. Let's say, what's your favourite movie soundtrack of all time?
That's a good question.
And they've also given us another JBL soundbar, which I think is great.
Mm.
And this is a question we haven't done. What's your favourite ever musical score?
Ooh, oh, like
that. Funko have come along because we're going to be masturbating over Tim Burton. Have given us a Beetlejuice Funko set of two, a Nightmare Before Christmas set of three. And let's make it really simple. Michael Keaton plays which character in Beetlejuice? They've also given us a Batman Daubs figure for the original Batman. Let's say, what year was Batman released? And this is really cool. They've given us a two-pack of the Back to the Future Funkos.
Ooh.
That's awesome. Who directed Back to the Future?
That's tough.
That's a real tough one. And I think because of the response we had on iTunes this time, it was huge, we should do another set of Wayne's World Funkos.
Ooh.
Because they are
fair.
Bloody awesome.
Yeah.
So let's say if you give us a 5-star rating and it's a really good rating, we'll do that.
Yeah.
We had an email come through this week and I just want to give a bit of a shout out. So we have a listener called Tom Murgatroyd.
Yep.
Okay. As he's listening to this, it's his 30th birthday. So
happy
his
birthday.
Missus yeah. has actually emailed and said it will make his absolute day if he's listening and hears a shout out from us.
Aww.
So I think that's quite sweet.
Yeah.
That's really
so
cool.
It's
happy
also,
birthday.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
And what we'll do, we'll send him a couple of Funko Pop. What did you say?
Happy birthday.
Poor guy. But we'll send him some Funkos as well for his birthday. But he's a big loyal listener. And his missus said he absolutely loves and it'll be a nice surprise for him.
Aww. 30, is it?
Nice. 30. Yeah.
It's all down there. It's all downhill from there, back.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
And his birthday is the 28th of February, which is a day after mine. So if any listeners want to send us some drinks or presents as well, that would be really nice. But what we'll do, we'll come back, as always, in 2 weeks' time and announce the winners of all these incredible prizes.
Prizes.
I don't know what it is, but when I kiss you, it's like I'm kissing my brother.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we talk about our favourite film from a director. Now, on the last episode, we picked out from the pot Mr. Tim Burton. Poor guy. He's had a bit of slack over the years, hasn't he, lads?
From us, yeah.
Yeah, big time. But, you know, like we said, we can now put those wrongs to right.
We can do indeed.
So unlike his career. That's how we dig already.
Yeah, ruined it. Supposed to be praising him.
We
ruined.
Are barely a minute into the segment, but never mind. Let's talk about his finer work that we enjoyed. So, Ben, I want to throw this over to you. Come on, let's save Mr. Burton. Go on, your pick.
Beetlejuice.
Lovely.
It has to be. I'm pretty sure it was the first Burton film I ever saw as a kid, and it's still my favourite to this day. We've talked many, many times about how interesting visuals seem to be Burton's main love, and this film manages to do the trick of combining fantastical visuals with a great story and superb performances, something you can't say about him for the last 20 years.
Here we go again. Because he's been too busy sucking off Johnny Depp. Let's just have one little dig and then it's done. That's my second, but you know
it's
what
like
I mean?
Ripping a plaster yeah. off, isn't it? Oh, I feel
Jesus
much better.
Christ.
I don't know. It just seems wrong, doesn't it, to praise him?
Well, I'm gonna try. Let me at least try.
Yeah.
So in terms of visuals, I love this film. So think of the practical effects, especially in regards to some of the characters in the afterlife. So do you remember the guy with the little shrunken head?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Or when our main characters, played by Gina Davis and Alec Baldwin, they pull their faces inside out
That's
to try and
amazing.
Haunt the house.
It's insane.
All those kind of practical effects I absolutely love. Or think about when Baldwin and Davis, they shrink down to visit the miniature little toy town and they're surrounded by all these kind of intentionally fake looking houses and trees and
That's
stuff
right.
like that.
Superb.
I love all that. These days, that would have just been a green screen shot,
yep.
wouldn't it?
With his wife. It would.
His
standing
current,
next door.
Oh, current wife.
Yeah. Yeah.
But back
yeah,
then, rather, he used a lot of practical effects. And I really appreciate that. there's also things like stop motion animation. So there's, you know, when they go out into the, like the sand dunes and there's that big weird snakey
thing.
Yeah, the worm.
That's awesome.
That's stop motion. And I really appreciate the thought and the effort that has gone into that kind of practical work. The film wouldn't work, though, without the man at its centre, the great Michael Keaton, who just breathes life into the grotesque but hilarious bio-exorcist Beetlejuice. And it's one of the all-time great screen performances for me.
I tend to look like him when I'm hungover.
I've seen that.
I know,
so
right?
So I can attest to the truth.
Yeah, I get it now.
Jenna juice.
That's degrading.
Don't say that three times.
No one wants to know about your juices. Yeah, I know.
Sorry, I didn't realise what she said. It took me a while. Yeah. I was like, what the fuck?
Jenna juice.
It took me a while, and then I'm like, oh God, I'm disgusting myself.
Coming
please,
soon.
Please get back on track. This is
Jenna juice.
Anyway,
coming soon.
Anyway,
no, thank you.
Baldwin and Davis. Please, back on track, are fantastic as the recently deceased couple at the heart of the film. But Winona Ryder is amazing.
Yes!
As goth girl Lydia, who decides to help them. It was one of her earliest roles as well. I think she'd done a few minor things, so this was a real breakout performance for her. It's just so good across the board. It's wacky and wild, and it's utterly unique.
Yes.
There is nothing like it, other than the bits of his own films where he's plagiarised stuff from it. But other than that, there's nothing like it. Entirely unique. No one makes films like Tim Burton. For good or ill, for good or bad, no one makes films like him. And it only takes a few seconds of watching a Burton film to know who directed it, which is sometimes a compliment and sometimes a scathing indictment on the quality of the film. But in the example of Beetlejuice, I mean that as the ultimate compliment.
This was one of the first films where you actually saw Jack Skellington from The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Is he?
He's emblazoned on the carousel.
Oh, is that right?
Yep.
No way.
It was one of the first appearances that he cropped up in.
Interesting.
Yes.
What are your guys' take on the fact that we are getting, hopefully, the sequel?
They've been saying this for the best part of a decade.
It's getting closer to it now. I think there's been a lot of contracts signed. And
I think Pixar, it didn't happen.
Johnny Depp's agreed to sign on.
No.
But no, I would like to see it because I just like to see the fact of Keaton just doing this again.
Yeah. And I suppose the thing that would work in its favour is sometimes when they do these sequels, many, many years after the fact, everyone looks too old and fat and out of shape and looks terrible. But he was meant to look dead anyway. So Michael Keaton in the makeup will look exactly the same as he did in 1988.
Yeah. I don't know how you can say stuff like that with Anchorman 2, Dumb and Dumber 2. They looked great.
Oh, yeah, exactly the same.
Toss.
Come on, Mark, what's your pick?
The original 1989 Batman.
Of course.
Oh. I've had a topic on this episode before where we talked about our favourite superhero film, and it is, even though Christopher Nolan's my favourite director and The Dark Knight is one of my favourite films, as a superhero film, nothing will ever top this. If you actually think now, what superhero film would come out, or a comic book film, would come out with no origin story for the first hour? It wouldn't happen anymore.
No.
The public need to be told absolutely everything, and then we get into it.
Yeah.
This film goes straight into it. We've just talked then about how great Michael Keaton is. He's fantastic in this.
Yeah.
He's absolutely superb. One of your favourite actors of all time, Jack Nicholson, is the Joker.
Yes.
It's a match made in heaven between them two. And Kim Basinger is absolutely awesome. The three of them on screen is absolutely awesome. But the credit as well, and I know we're not going to talk too much about music because that's what Gemma does when we talk about a director. But Danny Elfman's score for this film is magical, and I'm glad that them two went on and had this partnership again and again that worked so many times.
What's your thoughts on the Prince soundtrack?
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. There's some good tunes on there.
I like it.
Dad.
I love it when my favourite bit is when it starts slowing down and it's like, yeah, sexy bad dance.
But the script is great. The costumes are so iconic and look so good. It doesn't look too dated. It looks for me like a comic book would look on screen. It looks great. It's that gothic. Gotham looks amazing. It looks so, so dark and sinister, which is something he's very good at. He has these gothic look in all of his films. He's a gothic sort of guy, isn't he? He's a bit like David Lynch. He's a bit wacky and out there. His hair's always a bit mad. He always looks a bit like he listens to The Cure. He's got that look about him, hasn't he? But the way he handles this film on such a good budget and everything, it's a big jump from at the time.
Yeah.
He handled it beautifully, and the film, you watch it now, it doesn't look dated, it doesn't look shit. Michael Keaton was absolutely superb in this film.
And the amazing thing is, we talked not that long ago with regards to The Dark Knight about how it was, there was a lot of backlash about the casting of Heath Ledger because people were like, he's just the guy from 10 Things I Hate About You, how can he be the Joker? It was the exact same thing with Michael Keaton. When Burton cast him in this, people were like, oh, he's the star of crappy comedies like Mr. Mom. How can he be Batman? And again, same way Ledger did, he just blew it out the water. He just went, this is how you do it.
Now I want to watch Mr. Mom.
You don't, trust me.
But it's a great, great film. And again, go and watch it again, and it doesn't look dated. You're not sitting there going, oh, this looks crap. Because, again, practical effects. We have half of it built. It's not all CGI. The costumes look so well put together. Brilliant. Absolutely awesome film.
Oh, I want to watch it now.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to wrap this up with my choice, which is Ed Wood.
Ooh, very nice.
About the world's worst director, Edward D. Wood Jr. And Johnny Depp, I know he's probably the second person we slag off most on this podcast, but this was when he was good. And he plays the hapless character as he optimistically tries to make movies with his new friend, the legendary Bela Lugosi, and a whole bunch of misfits. What I love about this film, and you've both mentioned this on your picks, it's the atmosphere that this film has. This film was set in the 1940s, the 1950s, so of course it's a black and white movie, but it feels so retro, it feels vintage. It has that feel and look about it when people are looking at, you know, living on the moon and one day we're all going to live in space and have a jolly good time. And it gets that kind of feeling where it's not quite sci-fi, but it's telling the story of a sci-fi director. And the score too. The score by Howard Shore draws inspiration with this in mind. It's so kooky and it's so strange, and I love that. And yes, Mark, I'm falling in your trap where I'm talking about the score rather than a director. But the reason I love this film is because it makes you feel like you're truly in that era. And it's also worth noting Patricia Arquette in this film. She's in the second half of the film, and she just brings so much heart and so much charm as Wood's future wife, Kathy. She just plays it with such sensitivity, and I think she's the unsung hero of this movie. But it's a bloody good film.
It's one of those that I cannot honestly remember if I've seen it or if I just think I've seen it. I feel like I have, but I couldn't sit here and tell you what happens.
There's a trend with today's episode.
Yeah.
I've not seen it.
Yeah.
I've never seen Edward, but I know it's meant to be awesome.
Have you ever seen films?
No. Yeah. Are you aware of the concept of films?
Yes. I'm going to start watching such a thing. But it's before he overcast with Johnny Depp, and everyone said it's the best they got together because he got a great performance, the film looks stylish, it all looks great, and their match was so good that people wanted to see more, but they took that to heart gave us too much, and now it's like, we don't want to see any more.
Mm-hmm. It's like, stop it, guys.
Yeah, just stop it already.
Stop it already.
Yes, it's annoying.
Stop mucking about.
Well, I'm glad we're not on that. I did think we might have a bit of crossover today.
We almost always have crossover on Directors Movie Masturbate.
Yeah.
It's very rare when we have three separate ones, so that's interesting.
Blimey. Yeah.
Maybe we'll have to, I think, while we're talking to Gemma quite a lot today about this, if we run out of ideas of directors, we could do Movie Masturbate on composers or sound, you know.
Oh my god.
Just gives her a chance to have a...
Oh my god.
Don't be giving away your last secrets,
dude.
Please.
Yeah, we'll see. But what did social media, because they're the most important people.
Of course. We had loads. Yes. Sarah Jane Haywood on Facebook said, I'd have to go with Beetlejuice. The look and tone are beautifully matched and in perfect harmony with Elfman's quirky score. Keaton's performance is outstanding, as is Catherine O'Hara's.
I love Catherine O'Hara.
Me too. She's amazing. Gorilla Radio at Gorilla_KMac has said, Sweeney Todd for me, and you can't poo-poo it if you haven't seen it, Ben and Mark.
I like that. He's had a go at us.
Well, we can. Poo-poo, I say. Poo-poo.
I have actually seen it, and it's all right. It's actually all right.
Is it?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
But I want to kind of slag it off just to annoy him.
David Zwedwick at David Zwedwick has said, has to be Batman. Really gave us the foundation for the comic book movies we have today. Plus, Nicholson as Joker was over the top fantastic.
It was so good.
On Instagram, James Bottrill, a.k.a. Granny Bizzle, said, Edward Scissorhands, a beautiful, bonkers, magnificent-looking fairy tale. I had a feeling that you'd have this, Gemma. I thought this would have been your pick.
It's so whimsy, and I love whimsy, but I just loved Edward more.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Galaxy at Galaxy 42424242. Even though it's very unpopular and lowly thought of, I've always had a soft spot for Alice in Wonderland.
So they're the person that likes it. Wow, we finally found them.
You say that though, Mark, but I think it made over a billion at the box office. It was tremendously popular.
So did Avatar.
Spawned a sequel.
Very odd. On Facebook, Tonya Jarrett, who but Tim Burton would devise a film about the creator of the worst Hollywood had to offer in Ed Wood? Martin Landau was incredibly good.
He was.
It's a bit like the original Disaster Artist, isn't it? Like a film about the worst director ever.
It is, yeah.
But Bela Lugosi was all right.
Yeah.
Although I would love to see him go, oh, hi, doggy.
That would be good.
One of our prize winners from earlier today, I think, Liz Marshall at the_Liz Marshall, said, I'm going with Mars Attacks. He's directed a mix of the wonderful and some that should be burnt and forgotten. But this is a fun watch.
It is.
I agree.
It's just...
I love Mars Attacks. Carmelita Valdez-McCoy at Carmelita Says, P. Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Oh, that's classic.
I've never seen that. No. I've never seen any Pee-wee Herman stuff.
Oh, I have.
To me, it just seems very, very American. It's like an American cultural touchstone, and I just don't think it translates to British audiences. Maybe that's just me, maybe I'm wrong.
He's like a very excitable man-child who, in real life, got caught masturbating in a cinema.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah.
Having a little tug.
Or the five-knuckle shuffle.
Yeah.
He's a bit like Mr. Bean on coke.
Well...
You know.
Does he talk, though? He does talk.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, very good.
You'd love him, Ben.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, you wouldn't.
I'd rather watch him wank in the cinema.
Yeah. Coming soon.
Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Thank you.
Anywho, Screening Violet's blog at Screening Violet has said, I have to go with Sleepy Hollow. Managed to get into the cinema to see it when I was 12, and at the time it scared the crap out of me. A simple story done well and a perfect example of how effective Burton's style can be when he can be asked.
Yeah, yes. That's very fair.
Good summary.
Very true. On Instagram, finally, _pop_tart180 has said, I really enjoyed Big Fish.
Yes.
But I'm not a big fan of his recent work. It's been dire, especially that Chocolate Factory shitfest.
Nice. But Big Fish is a good film. Ewan McGregor is great in it.
I've not seen it.
It's quite sad. Mm. I don't want to spoil it too much, but you'll ring home afterwards and tell your father that you love him because it's very deep and dark. And if you've it's deep, honestly.
Mm. I'll steer clear of that.
Yeah, you'll hate it. You'd absolutely despise it.
Would you like some utterly unscientific analysis?
Always.
It's undoubtedly one of our most popular MMDs with hundreds of votes across all of our social media channels. There was a good spread of responses, actually, which is echoed in the fact that the three of us picked something different, with 13 out of his 18 movies all getting votes. Beetlejuice was the runaway winner.
Wow,
by,
nice.
By an absolute mile. The next best was Edward Scissorhands, closely followed by Batman Returns, which surprised me. Batman Returns got more votes than Batman.
I haven't watched Batman Returns for a long time, and I know Danny DeVito's pretty damn good in that.
And Michelle Pfeiffer is unreal in that film.
Meow.
We did not get a single vote for Planet of the Apes or Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Get out!
Which proves to me that our listeners have impeccable taste.
Indeed, that's why they listen to us.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. That makes me think the world's getting better.
Yeah.
Kind of.
And then we got Brexit and Trump. But, you know, but apart from that, we're getting there.
Let's move on.
That's true. Is it my turn to pick out of the hat?
It is. Do you want a drum roll?
Yes, please.
Whip it out, dude.
I don't really have to. Oh, fuck yes. Next time round, we're going to be massive debating over Martin Scorsese.
Oh, my Lord.
I came here in a time machine that you invented. Now I need your help to get back to the year 1985.
It's now time for the rewatch. And of course, it's Back to the Future. I feel like I shouldn't have to tell people what this film's about. I might actually bin it off. I'm not sure.
You lazy bastard.
I know.
You've just been too lazy to write an introduction.
Well, the film is all about Marty McFly, a typical American teenager from the 80s. Yes, the 80s.
Ooh. No.
And he's accidentally sent back to 1955 in a DeLorean time machine.
Happens to the best of us.
Invented by a slightly mad scientist. During his amazing trip back in time, Marty must make sure his parents-to-be fall in love so he can get back to the future.
Make sure his parents-to-be fall in love. Have you usually steal your introductions from the internet. Did you steal like a Chinese one and then use Google Translate to turn it into English?
He knows me so well. Blame IMDb on that one. But I think this is a big occasion for us. It probably should have been something like episode 150 or something.
It's a
big thing. But I'm excited for this. As you know, we brought out a t-shirt last year. And I was thinking, actually, we should probably bring out a new t-shirt soon.
That's a good
idea. Big time.
But it's Back to the Future. And it's now time for us to digest this film. And it's going to contain spoilers. But if you haven't seen this film, I'm just blown away.
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, stop listening.
Ben, I'm going to throw this to you. Back to the Future or Cack to the Future?
Now, when you announced this on the last episode, I must admit I wasn't as jazzed as Gemma was and obviously as you were, Mark. Only because I've seen this film so many goddamn times that part of me thought, can I be asked to watch it again?
Yeah.
And can I be asked to watch it again and have to critically think about it and why I like it and all that sort of stuff? But as soon as I put it on, I was taken straight back there because it sounds like a cliche, but they don't make them like this anymore, do they?
No.
Aww.
It's a true classic.
It's like slipping into an old pair of Converse. You know where you are with them. They fit like a glove, and it just makes your day as better as it should do.
Gemma's also using Google.
Gemma's been presented by a Google Translator. So.
Yes.
It's spreading like wildfire.
I'll tell you what, though. If we actually could get a sponsorship or endorsement, Converse would be pretty good.
Yeah.
If you want to send us some, that would be lovely.
Yeah, yeah. But this is an important film for anybody who loves cinema. And if you don't love this film, oh dear, we need words. But it's got everything you could possibly want. You know, it's got a completely out there story, which is actually quite simplistic when you think about it. It's got iconic characters, it's got memorable one-liners, a killer track by Huey Lewis and the News.
Yeah.
I mean, geez, they don't have anything like this in modern day cinema whatsoever, and it even inspired one of the greatest animations of all time, Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
But if you don't like it, then you're a butthead.
Nice.
You're indeed a butthead.
Tell your mum I said hi.
Yeah, and you should make like a tree and get out of here.
When we first did our top five films of all time, this made my top five, so I don't really need to gush anymore over it. It's an absolute masterpiece. I love everything about it, and I want to get straight into it. So for me, in cinema history, and probably one of my idols growing up, is Michael J. Fox playing Marty McFly. Is there genuinely a cooler guy in cinema history than that dude?
He's absolutely amazing, and it still is astounding to me that he wasn't the original cast actor.
Yeah.
You know, Eric Stoltz was cast, and they were filming for a week or two before they realised that Eric Stoltz was just too serious and was a method actor and all this, and like, it's not working. So they managed to get Michael J. Fox in, and the rest is history. He's amazing. He is Marty McFly. He will always be Marty McFly to me, and Teen Wolf.
Yes.
Yeah. He's so relatable. I remember watching this as a kid and thinking, like, this is a dude that I would totally hang out with and go out skateboarding with and travelling back in time and make sure that my parents get together and fall in love like they should do. But he's just so awesome, and I'm not a fan of the gilet, you know. I think it's usually people that read Horse and Hound or whatever, but he makes wearing a gilet look so fucking cool.
It's everything, though. He's got the jeans, he's got the shirt, the jacket, the Nike Buens, which are the red and white iconic trainers, and it's just everything about him. I just wanted to be him. Every time I had a skateboard, I could never ever pull off any tricks. I could never do a kickflip.
No. Or an I couldn't even do an ollie.
No, right. None of this bullshit. I used to play Tony Hawk's. That's the best I could do at skateboarding, but I could never skateboard. But when I went out there, for those moments when people weren't watching me on the street, I did think I was Marty McFly and that I could actually do tricks. And he's just the coolest guy. He's got the girlfriend, the car, everything.
I love the fact that he was doing, it was actually Michael J. Fox doing the sketching on the back of the, holding the back of the cars. But these days, because of insurance, they would never let a Hollywood actor, other than Tom Cruise. I'd love to see him sketching. little cruiser on a skateboard.
He would as well.
That'd be amazing. Yeah. But the fact that it was clearly Michael J. Fox on the back of those cars, that's awesome.
Oh, that part when he actually jumps over the car to go through, sort of like walking through the bullies and then going back on a skateboard, that to me, that was a true skateboarding trick. I kind of wish that it was real. I don't know why. I just feel like it's camera trickery.
Maybe that bit was, but everything else in it isn't. And I like skateboarding again. I was watching Tony Hawk's the other day on some video.
Yeah.
And have you seen, is it Bam Margera?
Bam Margera.
Have you seen him lately?
Yeah.
No, what's happened to him?
Yeah.
He looks like his dad. Well, he's put on about 20 stone. He went into rehab and he looks a mess.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is his name Phil or something? Yeah. They used to show him on Jackass.
Yeah. That's like, he had a spin-off too, didn't
he? He's been getting on like really heavy drugs and like outbursting on social media and attacking people and he's had to be locked away for a bit.
Is he still listening to Him? They were always his favourite band, weren't they? Him. Gash.
Yeah. CKY.
That's why I can't have sympathy for him, because I'm just like, you listen to them.
We saw CKY at Download this year.
No.
And they played that one song that everyone knows. Anyway, we're getting off track.
But we could then go to the soundtrack. I'm happy to talk about that.
I didn't realise, until I read this the other day, that The Power of Love by Huey Lewis and the News was written for this film.
I didn't know that.
I always just assumed it was a long-standing Huey Lewis song that they'd put in the film. He wrote it specifically for the film. Amazing.
What about Back in Time, the one in the end credits?
You only hear it a little bit towards the end, don't you? Yeah.
Rightfully so, because it is no Power of Love.
No.
But even just the score, like that actual iconic... Da, 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 it just makes the hairs stick up.
It does.
It's absolutely awesome.
You get flashback. You feel like you're a 12-year-old kid again or something.
It's the mark of a good film when you know what the score is and you can immediately associate it with a film. We've seen it with Jaws, we've seen it with Psycho, and it is certainly with Back to the Future.
Yeah, beautiful. And we have to also talk about Doc himself, because, again, you know, you said, like, Michael J. Fox was born to be him and you'll always be him. I've seen him in other films, but I always think he's meant to just be Doc.
Yeah.
I think he should have retired after that, because now I see him at Comic-Cons and I feel sorry for him. I'm like, oh, you're Doc. But is he the most amazing guy you want around as a kid? This lunatic who's just basically not scared to do anything, and he comes up with these incredible, absolute ridiculous inventions, but then he graces us with the DeLorean.
Yeah.
And that's, let's be honest, we've all wanted to be in that car.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
For, I don't know about you, but I'll admit to this. I mean, Ben's admitted a few confessions today about when I was younger, I did try and, I think, put something on my mum and dad's car to make it a DeLorean.
What?
Started pouring shit in the petrol thing. And
literally.
My dad went mental at me.
Putting bananas into the thing. Yeah. Trying to create a flux capacitor.
But garbage. In my head, I believe that we could get a car to do what it did and hit 88 miles per hour. I don't think my dad will ever forgive me for that, because I think he had to pay loads of money to get loads of shit taken out of the thing, but it's not good. But did you all want a DeLorean?
Yeah, of course. I did. It was the gullwing doors. Oh, if a DeLorean just had normal sideways opening doors, no one would give two shits.
Yeah.
It would just be an ugly, boxy 80s car. But the gullwing doors are classic.
It looked like a UFO.
Yes.
It looked like an actual spaceship from the future that went back in time.
Which was intentional. That's why the producers picked that as the car, so that when he goes back in time and the people find it in the barn, they think it's a UFO because that it does look space age, that car.
Also, I miss 80s mist. You know, when you first see it and there's just this unintentional fog that pours out of this little car.
There's no actual explanation for that.
It's just there. Yeah. Bring back 80s mist.
I love the fact that when Ernie Cline, when he got his first check, I think, for Ready Player One, he bought a DeLorean.
Good lad.
And that's what I'd do. If we ever made it, I'd get one.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I'd buy.
I don't think DeLorean exists as a company anymore, and I'm pretty sure John DeLorean's in prison. But people have the rights to make up DeLorean body kits, and when they make them now, they put a flux capacitor in it. You actually get one of those as standard in DeLoreans.
I want one.
Me too. But Christopher Lloyd, he has so much enthusiasm and charisma as Doc. You know, you see his belief in the character, which makes him so lovable and why we, you know, wax lyrical about him. He's got intelligence, but also intensity, which completely transforms the scene whenever he's in, you know, before he comes onto the screen, you know.
It's intelligence and intensity. Isn't that two of Kurt Angle's three eyes?
Yeah.
There we go.
Integrity. Integrity for the third one. It's true. It's damn true.
Kurt Angle as Doc Brown.
I'd watch it.
Take my money.
Kurt Angle bingo. I'm up for that.
Do you know who was originally going to be Doc Brown, or who the producers were chasing?
Go on.
John Lithgow.
What?
Which I think absolutely would have worked, because John Lithgow is really good at that kind of manic energy that Christopher Lloyd has. Think of him in Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah.
I think John Lithgow would have been a brilliant Doc.
Dick Solomon.
Yeah.
Totally.
I think he could have done it.
Aww.
One actor that never really gets enough praise for this film is Crispin Glover, who obviously plays McFly's father. I think he needs more of the limelight, because every scene he's in, he's absolutely awesome. As the teenage version of him and as the father, he's amazing. His hair slicked.
Mm.
He's an idiot. He's an absolute moron of a father. But don't you warm to him?
No. See, I disagree entirely. I think he is clearly the weak link of the film. He massively overacts. So it's no surprise to me that they didn't bring him back for either of the sequels.
Yeah, I like him.
I like him.
I like Crispin Glover as an actor, and he's done a lot of good stuff in preceding years. But I hate him in this film.
But he's my density.
It's weird as well that they changed his girlfriend.
Yes, Jennifer.
Yeah, because the woman who played her initially, I think something like her mother had cancer, so she couldn't commit to coming back for the sequels. But they brought in Elizabeth Shue, which is an upgrade for me.
Yeah.
I bloody love Elizabeth Shue.
Yeah, I absolutely love her.
How have we not mentioned good old Biff Tannen?
Oh,
Thomas F. Wilson.
So good.
He's just having such a blast playing this role. But he's the bully that you love to hate. You know, he's such a knucklehead. And he's built like a brick house. You know, you're absolutely terrified when you're on the wrong side of him. But bless, even George, when he's trying to be, you know, in on the joke, he's like, oh, ha-ha, yeah, I'm going to do your homework. But he's absolutely scared shitless of him still. But Biff, for me, I bloody love him for all the wrong reasons.
Your shoes undone, McFly. So good. He's a knobhead, but I love him.
I love him. I just love the whole rap in the head. Hello, McFly. You know, I love all that.
My favourite Biff Tannen, though, is right at the end when you see him all old and fat, and he's just the complete polar opposite of what he used to be as a kid. And the way how he kind of, like, he quickly puts his hand on his hip whenever he talks to George, it's like when Mark puts his hands on his hips.
Oh, yeah.
This is an inside thing we don't want the public knowing about.
But it's so funny when you do it.
Have you done the second coat yet? Just love it. Don't lie to me. Don't lie to me, Biff.
And it's the whole butterfly effect thing, isn't it? Because the only reason why he's so different in the what would now be the present is because George punched him in the past. If George hadn't punched him, George would have kept being under his thumb all the way through adulthood. But that one punch changed everything for both men.
So good.
Fantastic. The film is funny and entertaining, but it builds to one of my favourite payoffs in film history. So you've got them in 1955, and they're trying to get it so that the DeLorean works so Marty can get back to the present. You've got Marty in the DeLorean, and it won't start. It keeps cutting to him, and he can't get the car to start. You've then got Doc on top of the clock tower, and he's trying to get the two cords to reach, but they're slightly too short because one of the cords is caught under the tree branch, and it's cutting back between the two of them. Then it cuts up to the weather, and there's lightning coming down. It's rainy and windy and all this kind of stuff, and it's thrilling. It's genuinely, even though you know this is a Hollywood film, and of course they're going to pull it off, you're watching it, and even now, having seen it 30 times, I'm watching it going, shit, is he going to make the leads fit? Is he going to do it? He's done it! Is he going to get the car to start? He's done it! It's such a brilliant constructed scene. I love that.
And that's why we don't get films. When was the last time Ben made that noise about any new review?
I literally don't think I've made that noise before in my life.
This is a first for me.
But it's true. And the fact is, like, we don't... You said it at the very start, but we don't get films like this anymore. And that's not me. Mark, you're stuck in the 80s. I'm not bloody Uncle Rico. I genuinely believe the soundtrack, the story, the characters, the performances... The magic, it's just got this feeling about it that makes you just feel, okay, we were younger when we saw it, but I don't believe the kids are getting films like this anymore.
No, and the wonderful thing, though, is I agree with you. I don't think there are films like this that the kids are getting, but a lot of kids, new generations, are discovering this movie.
Yeah.
So my little brother, I say little, he's taller than me, the little fucker, but he's 13, will be 14 next week, and he loves Back to the Future to the point where he's got a Back to the Future poster in his bedroom.
Nice.
So I love the fact that new generations are still coming to this film and realising how great it is.
But even throughout the film, it still refers to what happens in the present, but in the past.
That's where Christopher Nolan got it from, I reckon, with his writing for the future.
But even things like it predicts what's going to happen. Like with Goldie, we see Goldie in the diner and he's just like a busboy. And then Mike says, oh, you would make a great mayor, and you will. And he's like, Mayor Goldie. And it's like, that's what happens in his day. You know, I love how the film is quite referential to the present time when we see it at the beginning. God, it does sound really complicated when you say it like that.
Yeah.
But again, even when you're watching it, it's just so... It flits back and forth so well.
It's very smart.
Marvin Berry and the Starlighters.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Hey, Marvin!
I've discovered that sound.
Yes. Yeah. That new sound you were looking for. Listen to this.
You know, it's just fun. It's exciting. And it's exhilarating to know that, you know, this is purely the reason why I love cinema so much. Because for an hour and a half, 2 hours, you really do lose yourself in this story that you know is never going to happen in real life. Kind of be cool if it did, but you just immerse yourself and you're going to be bezzy mates with Marty. You want to be mates with Doc. I mean, how did Doc and Marty meet up and become friends?
Do you know, the producers were concerned about that. They thought, it's very odd that this 17-year-old lad would be hanging out with this 60-year-old bloke. There's something suspicious there.
Jimmy Savile.
So they purposefully put in the scene where Marty goes to his house to play the big speaker, and that's meant to put into people's minds, okay, the only reason why he hangs out with him is because he loves to play guitar and Doc's got the biggest speaker.
Yeah.
That they put that in specifically to try and understand why these two disparate people are hanging out.
I don't mind it because they make magic together.
They do. Do any of you have any particular scenes that you love or visuals that you love? I'll tell you mine. My favourite shot is the shot in 1955 after Marty has got in the car, hit 88 and gone back to the future, and then you see the flames on the floor and you see Doc running up the street in between the flames. Just, I love that shot.
Just dancing.
It's glorious, isn't it?
I think I like the bit when he goes into the barn and we get the "I am Darth Vader" and that suit and everything just looks great, and the little kids' reaction stuff. But there's so many, dude. Yeah. I don't know where you'd start.
I love the prom scene, the enchantment under the sea, when he's playing "Go Johnny Go." You know, he's doing the duck walk with a guitar. He's just seen the photograph where all of his siblings and himself have reappeared again, so he knows that everything's going to be okay. But of course, little do we know, the clock tower. But I just love it. It's just exciting.
It's one of those films as well that you've seen it so many times that certain lines seep into your subconscious, even not the famous lines. Like, we know famous lines, but things like when Marty crashes the car into the side of that building and the tramp's there, and I just knew the tramp was about to say, "crazy drunk driver." It's not a huge line, but I just know it in my brain. Or the bit when Marty's playing guitar with that band and you know he's about to say, "watch me for the changes."
Yeah.
It's just little things like that that you just never forget, even though they're not hugely important lines.
I kind of wish that you guys, you know, we all hanging out a lot earlier, because when Secret Cinema did this, they created the clock tower. They created everything, and it was the, like, we've been to see Blade Runner, we've seen other ones, but nothing will top it. They actually created this little village, and it was, the town was there, they had the dance you could go and attend to. It was so well done to detail. It was amazing. I felt like I was there. I wish they did it again.
I would have loved
to have gone to that.
Yeah.
I'd like to go to that. Do you know something that would make you both happy?
Go on.
So the rights to this film are owned by Robert Zemeckis, and he has specifically stated that they will not be a remake or reboot of this film as long as he lives.
Yay!
So long may he live.
Watch him die next week. No. And like, Justin Bieber, cast as Martin McFly.
Don't. Everything we say always comes true.
And Doc will be James Corden.
No, Mark, you forget the power we have. Stop. Take it back.
Yeah, I wish I could.
Pretend that never happened.
James Corden! That's the ultimate insult. There can nothing be worse. I think we've said as much as we can. We could go on for a day. We could do a whole special. And the only one thing I did want to cover off is, what's your thoughts on the sequels quickly?
I actually prefer 2 to 1.
Wow.
I think Back to the Future. Yeah. It's because it's all the stuff like the hoverboard and all that kind of stuff in the almanac.
Perfect Pepsi.
Yeah, I remember all that stuff more. So I prefer 2 to 1, and I hate 3.
I'm exactly the same as Ben. 2's a masterpiece. 3 is a snooze fest. Yeah.
But as a trilogy, I still think Fair Play, that's a great Sunday afternoon viewing.
Yeah.
Do you know what the odd thing is? The quality between 2 and 3 is so massive, which usually happens when films are made years apart, but they weren't. They were filmed back to back.
I know.
So how is one so great and one so poop?
I know.
I don't know.
We'll never know.
We'll never know.
It's mad, isn't it? Because my parents took me to see the second one in the cinema, and I owe them a lifetime of, you know, debt for that. That's an amazing experience. And at the end, it says part 3 coming.
It does.
And that, you don't get that.
And it gives you like a little bit of a
teaser. A little bit. Imagine that now.
I know.
At the end, Infinity War. that oversold it. Like at the end of Infinity War, if it gave us a little like trailer for Endgame.
Wow.
Doesn't happen. Anyway, let's score it.
Yeah.
You have to rub it in the bloody hell. Mac and me, do you know what I mean?
You can't let it go.
I know, it's just upsetting. But anyway, Ben.
It doesn't make my list of all-time favourite films. It wouldn't crack my 10. So for that reason, I'm not going to give it a 10. It's a very, very high 9.
Gemma.
Of course it's a 10 out of 10. 10.
Brilliant. I'm going to give it a 10, obviously. So overall, Back to the Future gets a skip to the end. Well-deserved 10 out of 10. Whose rewatch choice is it now? Because it's a big one to top now.
It's mine.
Ooh. No pressure.
I got to thinking from the last episode how much we bloody enjoy talking about Glass and one actor in particular, James McAvoy. I've mentioned this film a few times, and I think it's only right to bring it as our next rewatch. So on the next episode, we're going to be rewatching Filth.
Yes!
Awesome.
It's time for the third and final round of our latest game, Namey Lee Curtis. And this time around, it is Gemma versus Mark.
Well,
playing for a little bit of respect.
Kind
of.
Pride.
A little bit of dignity.
as much as we can claw back, really.
Because technically, you're both losers.
Yep.
Because I've already won the game, haven't I, kids?
Sod's law.
Kind of. Yeah.
So you're playing for second best.
As always.
As per bloody usual. This is how the game works. I have got the names of 5 different actors and actresses. And for each one of those, I have the names of 5 characters they've played.
Okay.
What I will do for each one, I will give you a name of one of their characters. First person to shout their name can guess at who the actor is. If you get it right, you get 5 points. Next name, if no one gets it on that one, next one is 4 points, then 3, then 2, then 1. Does that make sense to you so far?
Gotcha.
Yeah?
100%.
Dead simple, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah?
Right.
Done.
Yes.
Ready to go?
Ready.
Yeah.
Ready to go.
Let's go.
So here's your first one for 5 points.
Oh my God.
We're right at 8, man.
I thought you said, like, let me have a sip of this.
I asked you, ready to go.
I know, but I was just like,
We were just bantering. Yeah. We were just banters.
Let me have a sip of this old malt cider.
Moot.
Is it moot?
I love a bit of old moot.
Can we cheers?
Strawberry and pomegranate. This is to the Skip fam.
Oh, it is delicious, tell you.
Ah, Skip fam forever.
Ooh.
I love how there's a stamp on it that says pronounced incorrectly since 1947, and Mark has just proven that for us.
I genuinely might cut that out and stick it on my head. Right then, yeah, let's do this.
Okay.
God.
So our first actor, for 5 points, the character is Lefty Ruggiero.
It's my wrestler name.
Remember, you've got to shout out your name.
Okay. I'm not confident about you, Mark.
Sometimes I feel like just going for it, but then Corey said, go for it, and it didn't work out for him.
Oi, it has.
I know, he chose to fail.
He's wildly successful.
Yes. No.
No, let's go for a number four.
For 4 points. Yeah. Sonny Wurzik.
Gemma.
Go on.
Al Pacino?
It is Al Pacino. That is 4 points for Pooch. So Sonny Wurzik is from Dog Day Afternoon. Prior to that, Lefty Ruggiero was from Donnie Brasco. I would have gone on to say for 3 points, Frank Serpico from Serpico.
Nice.
2 points, Tony Montana from Scarface. And 1 point, Michael Corleone from Godfather.
I'm sorry. I'm already a winner in my eyes because I got more than 1 point. So everything else is just lucky.
I'm surprised you didn't put Dunkachino. But one of his most famous roles.
That's for 0 points.
So Gemma's already in a fairly commanding lead here. Mm. So you need to... You know, maybe have a punt.
I know.
Are you ready for number two?
Yep.
Come on.
For 5 points, Matilda.
I'm not ready.
Any thoughts?
Gemma.
Go on.
Heath Ledger.
Incorrect.
Only because of the Dark Knight. Oh, fuck.
What are you on about?
He wears a... Oh, it doesn't matter. Fuck
he
it.
He played the Joker in the Dark Knight. Do you think he played someone called Matilda in the Dark Knight, Gemma?
It's only because I got really cocky because he, in the nurse's outfit, he has a name badge that says Matilda. Idiot. And I thought it was a trick question.
I'm not Mark.
Oh, that's true. Sorry, Ben.
Can I have a guess now for 5 points or do I have to go to the next round?
You can if you wish.
Go on.
Natalie Portman.
Correct.
Yes! Well done!
Thank you.
In what film?
The one and only Leon the Professional.
Correctamundo.
What a film that is.
You're absolutely
it's a
right.
Great film.
I would have gone for 4 points, Nina Sayers in Black Swan. 3 points, Evie Hammond, V for Vendetta.
Great film.
2 points, Jane Foster in Thor.
Mm. Wow.
And 1 point, Padme Amidala in Star Wars.
Never mind. Yeah.
So Mark is in the lead, 5-4.
That never happened.
Do you have more points now, Mark, after two rounds than you had in the entirety of the time we played?
I've scored nothing
that's
until now.
Tremendous.
I would luck it. I really want a power cut now, so that's it.
Next one. For 5 points, Mr. Furious.
Oh, my Lord. I'm not feeling lucky. Are you feeling lucky?
I just kind of want to go for a wild guess.
Just do it then.
The gods might be on my
Don't,
side.
Bro.
But
you're already winning.
But we'll go for the next one.
For 4 points, Ted Stroman. Not Braun Strowman, Ted Stroman.
Oh, I don't know this. Oh my God, why do I know this?
Do you know it enough to have a guess though, Gemma?
It's
that's
proper ringing a bell.
I know.
You
I know,
said
right?
that about Corey.
Hey, Queenie. Don't ever forget Queenie.
Corbin Nash is a masterpiece. Yeah. I'm going to have to say no and be boring.
Yeah, what he said.
Okay, so for 3 points, Tug Speedman. Tug Speedman.
That's my rapper name.
That's my sex name.
You are a speedman,
porn star,
I've been told that.
And a tugger.
And a tugger. No, Ted Stroman, though, that. I can hear it.
Do you want to go for the 2-pointer?
Yeah.
White Goodman.
Gemma.
Go on.
Ben Stiller.
Correct.
Bastard. That's all right. Only
so
2 points.
I gave you Mr. Furious from Mystery Men.
Yeah.
Ted Stroman from There's Something About Mary.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. That's it.
Tug Speedman from Tropic Thunder. White Goodman from Dodgeball. And finally, I would have given you for 1 point, Gaylord Focker from Meet the Parents.
The first one's
that
all
is
right.
My sex name.
Just the rest ones are shit.
So at the minute it is 6-5 in Gemma's favour.
Very
close. Right.
Very close.
Razor's edge.
And we've still got two more to play.
I'd be happy with 5 at the end. It still sounds good.
It does, doesn't it? Like better than one.
This one's kind of tough, I think. This one's pretty tough, Mark. So good luck. For 5 points, Ree Dolly.
How's Ree spelled?
R-double-E. Will that help you in any way?
Yes,
Mark?
Massively.
No, it won't. Come on, give over, lad.
Ree Dolly.
Yeah.
No. There is no bell being rung. There is no bell end listening.
Mm-hmm. Might be a few. No, there isn't. Alison's are all lovely, lovely people.
Skip fam.
4 points. Tiffany Maxwell.
Ooh. Sounds like a lady to me.
You'd hope so.
It's not Heath Ledger, Gemma, just in case.
What a dick.
Jesus.
I'm trying to think.
Can you go for the first two names again?
Ree Dolly for 5 points.
Yep.
Tiffany Maxwell for 4.
Who looks like a Tiffany? Ideally someone called Tiffany, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I might just go for a guess.
Do it, man.
You'll be, I don't know.
Do
well,
it.
It's up to you.
Go on, do it.
No, we'll go for the third one and then Gemma will get it straight away and it'll be...
You want the third one?
Okay. Yeah.
Joy Mangano.
Gemma.
Go on.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Correct.
Oh!
I'm glad. I wouldn't want to get her right. Honestly, I'd hate it. It'd feel like a defeat.
So we had Ree Dolly from Winter's Bone, for which she was nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah, true.
You know, Tiffany Maxwell, Silver Linings Playbook, also nominated for an Oscar. Joy Mangano was Joy, obviously. Mm-hmm. I would then have gone for 2 points for Katniss Everdeen from The Hunger Games, and for 1 point, Mystique from The X-Men.
Nice.
Harsh. So the score is now 9-5 in Gemma's
favour.
That's
all right.
So
I
you
think
need
you can still do
five
it.
To
you
win.
Need 5 to win, 4 to draw. Yeah. And we have got a tiebreaker if it goes that way.
Oh my, the real quiz.
Are you ready for the fifth one?
Okay. I am.
For 5 points, Sean Archer.
So do I just go for it?
Just
as
do
a
it.
Random guess.
Do you risk it for a biscuit?
I can't really lose anyway. Because I'm.
Well,
I can't.
You can't
win.
Lose worse.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Fuck it. Let's go for it, shall we?
Go on.
Nicolas Cage.
Oh, it's not. Heartbreaker, and you'll understand why shortly.
Okay.
So you're locked out.
Oh, my Lord.
Going to the next one then. So, Gemma, do you want to have a go on this, or do you want to hear the fourth?
Let's
go
for it, please, because I want to make it more exciting for the listeners. Just have a wild guess.
I can't think of anybody who's called Sean Archer.
Just pick of any name.
Okay.
No, don't go. Do you want? You can go to the next one if you
want. No, let's guess. Come on.
Don't bully me, Mark.
I can still draw.
No,
I can still draw.
Stop it, Biff.
You know your own mind, Gemma. You do what you want to do.
Do
let's
it.
Go to 4 points.
Pussy.
Loser. Who's
all right,
winning?
Can we not get aggressive, children? For 4 points, Tony Manero. If Gemma doesn't get this, you're back in the game. It won't help you. You'll still lose, but you're back in the game.
Tony Manero.
Yeah.
Sounds kind of Italian to me.
It is.
Ooh, that could be a clue. Oh, I don't fucking know.
Right, you're taking too long.
Let's do it.
Mark, you're back in the game.
Let me just get my breath. Right, okay.
So we're ready for the 3-pointer. So you can at least get some respect.
I'd
back.
Happily go out with just 1 point loss, right. Yeah.
Well, for 3 points, Chili Palmer. How do neither of you know this?
Because we're stupid. Because we've lost both our rounds.
John Travolta.
Correct.
Well, yes!
And that's why I was so sorry for you when you said Nicolas Cage. Because Sean Archer...
Face Off.
Is
oh my God!
And technically, Nicolas Cage did pretend to be Sean Archer.
So, I get the point.
No.
You absolutely do not.
No, I've been rigged.
No, you haven't.
I was going about the face that I saw. Not the,
no.
That's not bad, though.
It's based on getting who played all five of the characters, not just one of them. So, no, you don't get any points. But well done. So, Sean Archer was John Travolta in Face Off. Tony Manero was Staying Alive. Chili Palmer was Get Shorty.
Oh.
For 2 points, I would have given you Danny Zuko for
of
Grease.
Course.
And for 1 point, Vincent Vega for
nice.
Pulp Fiction.
That's all right, man. My score's
you,
all right.
You did all right. So, the final score is 9-8.
Oh, I'm all right with that.
That is
I'm
very
right
decent.
With that.
Yeah.
Well.
Would you like to do the tiebreaker?
This is the one.
Absolutely.
Just a bit of fun.
Yeah.
It's a bit of fun.
We like fun, right? Mm-hmm. We're big fans of fun.
For 5 points, Rasputia Lattimore Rice.
Think of all the obscure people that we've made fun of over the years. Rasputia
Lattimore Rice.
Doesn't ring a bell, I'll be honest.
I've never heard the word Rasputia either, so...
Hang good. On.
Oh. Oh my God, I can see the cog turning. Look at it.
No, we'll go for the next one.
Okay. For 4 points, James Thunder Early.
I might just guess, because I can't... Kevin Smith.
Incorrect.
Okay.
Gemma, you're locked out for 3 points, Gemma.
I can't be locked out when it's a tiebreaker.
No, you are.
Fucking hell.
No, you're right. You're
yeah,
both
yeah,
in.
Come on.
For 3 points, Billy Ray Valentine. Pretty sure we gave away a Funko Pop of this character about 3 episodes ago.
Gemma.
Go on.
Eddie Murphy.
Correct.
Yay!
Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy played Rasputia Lattimore Rice in Norbit.
Of course.
Which you both knew, I'm sure. Played James Thunder Early in Dreamgirls, Billy Ray Valentine in Trading Places. I would have then gone for 2 points, Prince Akeem in Coming to America, and for 1 point, Axel Foley in Beverly Hills Cop.
That was a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun.
So Gemma is the victor today.
That's all right.
It feels even better when you win.
So you just get some points, feels good.
Yeah, that's true, actually, yeah.
But it was very close, 1 point. Yeah. Mark. You must feel devastated.
I think, honestly, I've been fucked over with the face-off thing.
You absolutely haven't.
Tweet. Ben fucked Mark.
Definitely
tag.
Whoa.
No, actually, don't do that.
No. And don't do any drawings.
No, please, no.
Competition to win a Funko.
No one asked for that.
You're Ben fucking me.
No one asked for that.
No, you will not get. You will not win anything.
Thank you.
That's been a lot of fun, that game show.
It was.
A lot more fair as well.
Yeah.
I'm happy.
We've got another one coming up, though, haven't we?
Yeah.
Do we want to give any of it away, Mark?
No.
We'll say one thing that leads them kind of a little teaser.
Yeah.
There's no Games Master involved. That's a fucking
clue.
I mean, that is a little teaser.
That is.
In as much as it can't help them in any way to figure it out. A very little teaser.
But come back in 2 weeks for that anyway.
I can't guess you guys aren't ready for that yet. But your kids are gonna love it.
It's time for Skip to the Recommend, that point in the show where we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now and we want you to enjoy it too. So much hot shit coming out right now, guys.
Too much.
So much meaty goodness. So I'm very intrigued to see what you've brought for me this time round. Pooch, what have you got?
Well, I'm going to sink my teeth in to a Korean Netflix original TV show called Kingdom.
Oh,
bloody love your Korean shit, don't you?
Can't get enough of it. Mm-hmm. Annyeong! But from the moment I watched the trailer for this about a month ago, I knew this was love at first sight for me. And thankfully, it was rectified watching all glorious six episodes. It's originally adapted from a webcomic series called The Kingdom of the Gods, and its story is set in medieval Joseon in Korea. There's rumours spreading across the land about the health of the kingdom's king, and the royal officials are doing all they can to hush it up. But in the midst of this, a plague starts spreading that resurrects the dead and turns them into crazed and maniacal flesh eaters. Are the two linked? And can the crown prince, the rightful heir to the throne, help to stop it all? Well, yeah, no. You're going to have to find out. Mm-hmm. But first things first, you are not going to watch a more beautiful drama than this show. Everything about this, both acting and technicalities, is breathtaking. The cinematography is just stunning. It makes me grateful that we're in an age of technology where drones can be used to really sort of capture the vistas mm-hmm. of Korea and its mountainous range. The sound, the editing, the direction, it's all top-notch. And I haven't even approached the topic of the zombies.
Oh, now you got me.
Now, to come up with a zombie, you've got to make it kind of original because there's so much trope out there. You know, you've got the slow, bumbling zombies. You've got the fast, maniacal, like rage-induced zombies. So,
oh, like the World War Z ones where they're running.
Yeah, yeah, they're just kamikaze kind of style. And I'm the biggest zombie fan there is. So I really wanted to make sure that I was going to be investing my time where the zombies were going to be unlike anything I've ever seen. And bloody hell, these zombies, freaking hell, they contort, and each of their movements when they're waking up from their resurrection, you hear bones crunch, you see skin decaying, but in a way that is not similar to The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Like skin darkens over time, it's like charcoal, like you're literally seeing the process of death amongst these walkers. And it is just so fucking scary. It's glorious with the violence, the action is just completely there. And it's just an entrancing storyline. I absolutely adore this. And special props go out to Ji Jae-hoon as the crown prince, who holds each scene with such grace and power. And Bae Doona, who some people might recognise from Sense8. Mm-hmm. She is just capturing every single part that she's in. You know, she's the beating heart of the story. She's surprising because despite the fact that there's so much undead around, you're drawn to her. Her face tells so much about what's going on in the situation. I'm really hoping season 2 comes out very, very soon. It's only 6 episodes, but bloody hell, Korea is at the top of the TV food chain right now.
Wow. This was the one that you tried to tell us about a few episodes ago, and you said that there was something coming out. You couldn't remember what it was about or what it was called.
Yeah, but it was in Korea.
Me and Mark were like, oh, sounds good.
Yeah.
But this is it.
Now we know.
Now we know.
Hands down, this is going to make my top 5 TV shows of this year,
hands down.
Stay tuned for that in 11 months.
Show your cards.
Can't help it. It's so exciting, though. This is a show that I want to tell every single person about because it just has everything in it. And also, the way how the season 1 ends is just, you have to carry the story on.
See, this is where Mark and I could do with kind of melding our minds because the kind of Korean aspect, I like that kind of foreign film.
Yeah.
I'm down. Zombies I don't care about. Ah. Mark, kind of, you love the zombie stuff, but you really don't want to read.
No.
So
if
we could meld half of our brains, we'd bloody love this.
Like Station from Bill and Ted's Bogus
Journey.
Yes.
did you hear they've announced it's going to be Christmas, the third Bill and Ted?
I've heard.
Bloody hell.
I'm all over that.
That's going to be a good one.
But what do you think? Are you going to watch this zombie thing?
Probably not. But that's not a negative thing. No, I just got so much to watch.
Yeah.
I've got so much. But I've heard great things, and we're texting this week, and you're telling me how much it's great. And the reviews are absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. I've been reading 5 stars all over the board. I wouldn't be surprised if we get more.
Yeah, it's
like great.
92% on Rotten Tomatoes at the moment.
That's really good.
That's pretty good.
Really cool.
Lovely stuff. Thank you, Gemma. Mark, what you got?
Mine is a wrestling photographer.
Ooh.
Oh, hello.
James Musselwhite.
Yeah.
You can find him on Twitter at Y2 Gym Bob, and he's got a website called portraitofawrestler.com.
Yeah.
And he spends most of his time on the British scene, the indie scene. So most of his photo shoots are stuff at like NXT events, at Ring of Honor. He went to All In and got some shots of Cody Rhodes that caught my eye. And I've been following him for a while on Instagram. But when he went to All In, he was capturing these pictures that I just instantly caught my eye and was like, oh, that's not just a normal wrestling shot. That's something really, really good. So I went on his Instagram. He actually listens to our podcast. Amazing. I was looking at some of his previous tweets.
Is he American or British?
He's British.
Yeah.
And he's got some recent shots where he's got a studio and he's done these actual portraits of a wrestler. And he's done wrestlers like Tyler Bate, Tony Storm, Pete Dunne, who we love, Trent Seven, Cody Rhodes. And I'm just going to, while I'm sat here with Ben, just show some of his work just to kind of show how he actually looks. But when he does his own portraits in the studio, you see these different sides of the wrestlers that you don't always capture in these WWE promo shots.
Yeah.
So we see this different light of all the wrestlers. I'm just showing these guys here. But if you go on his Instagram and check it out, all these wrestlers just look really cool. It's just a bit different. You wouldn't expect it from what he gets out the wrestlers.
That one of Tony was amazing.
Absolutely awesome. All of his photos are just really decent. But he spends a lot of time on the scene capturing these moments that I think just look amazing. And they're better than some of the WWE ones that I see that they use on their
Instagram.
The
WWE ones, they're just flat. Yeah, flat generic photos.
And this, just for me, is something that I think he's got a huge future ahead of him. And he's doing really well. I'm sure he's making a living out of it. But every photo, there's just something a bit different that makes me go, this guy's got a talent.
Yeah.
And I think he's someone to watch. I can see him being used again and again by these big companies. But the fact he's like getting these shots of Pete Dunne before he got into WWE, he got Trent Seven, he got Cody Rhodes, he's got all these great names under his belt already, and they're wanting to work with him.
Yeah.
Cool. So I just think it's great to see these British guys doing well for themselves.
Indeed. Is he going to be at the NXT tapings in Coventry?
I don't know, but if he's listening in the ears, we'll have a beer.
Well, that's what I'm going to say. Yeah, we're going to be there. If you're there, dude, let's hook up.
Yeah, it sounds good to me.
Take a picture of us.
Get us backstage and meet all these wrestlers. Yeah. But I've followed him for a while, and he does listen to us, and sometimes I see tweets from him. And I just think, do you know what? Some people need like that push, and he doesn't, but I just want to give him credit, because once I went on his website, I was just blown away. Yeah. I think his actual kind of portfolio is absolutely flawless, and I'm so excited to see more and more events. And I love the fact that he's not going to WrestleMania and these big huge events. He's doing it all at the shows that me and Ben attend,
the indie scene.
That's what it's all about. It's great
that's
to
awesome.
See
I will definitely be looking at his Instagram later on at some more of those pictures.
Very good,
fantastic.
So cheers for that. It's James Musselwhite.
Hi James.
And what was he called? Jim Bob
at Y2 Jim Bob.
Excellent
stuff. Yeah,
nice.
I'll be looking
bit
at
different
that.
As well,
bit different indeed.
Cool.
I'm going to finish off with something not different. I'm going with a book again, as
no.
as I almost always do. And it's a book called The Sopranos Sessions by Alan Sepinwall and Matt Zoller-Seitz. Now, I've previously brought one of Sepinwall and Seitz's books to the show before, because they're two of America's foremost TV critics. The previous book of theirs I brought was TV The Book, which is where they listed the 100 greatest TV shows of
and
all time.
And I bought that.
You
and
did?
And it's a damn good read.
It,
no,
but
you
brilliant.
Should. It's,
of course
it's a,
you haven't.
It's a fabulous read. So what they've decided to do for their newest book is focus on one show, The Sopranos, held by many people to be the greatest TV show of all time. I would argue Breaking Bad is better, but it's a close race. Really, the holy trinity are Breaking Bad, The Sopranos, and Mad Men. And you've got The Wire banging on the door right behind
and Lost.
Yes.
See, I love Lost. Yeah. You won't find a bigger fan of Lost than me, but it's not a prestige drama in the same way Sopranos is, and so on. But anywho, the book is brilliantly written because they're two great writers, and it features essays for every single one of The Sopranos' 86 episodes, where they analyse the show in depth. They look at the themes, the symbolism, the meaning throughout the show, and it's a brilliant accompaniment to watching the show. So instead of just sitting there and reading the book in one go, what I'm actually doing is re-watching the show. So I will watch an episode and then I'll pause. I will then read the accompanying essay in the book.
Oh,
that's
nice. Really cool.
I'll then watch an episode and then read the next essay, and so on and so forth. It's a great book because it deepens my understanding. Because I can be a bit dense when it comes to thematic things. Sometimes I watch things from a purely aesthetic point of view, like, that bit was good, that was funny, that was loud, I liked it. I don't necessarily think thematically. When we're reviewing films for this podcast, I do, because I force myself to be. But if I'm just watching something as a fan, I don't. So it's nice reading someone else who's done the thematic thinking that I've not done. So it really deepens your love of the show. The book, as well as the essays, also features extensive interviews with the show creator David Chase, which are fantastic, and it includes him addressing the controversial finale in an interview for the first time. He's always avoided discussing the finale, just brushing it off, whereas this one he's a bit more definitive about what he meant, and I'm not going to say anything more. I want people to go out and read this for themselves. It's so good at not only highlighting how great the show was, but how important it was to the TV landscape. We're so used to anti-heroes in TV now. You've got your Walter Whites in Breaking Bad, you've got your Don Drapers in Mad Men, but they really are the children of Tony Soprano. When this came out in 1999, there really wasn't such a thing as these kind of anti-hero, almost villainous lead characters, because the belief in television was your characters need to be likable and relatable. People won't tune in every week if they don't like and relate to the characters.
Yeah.
Whereas Tony Soprano, in episode 5 of the first season, you see him murder a man by choking him to death.
Yeah.
And that might not seem like a crazy thing now, because we're used to that. We're used to Walter White poisoning
a
kid.
Yeah, of course.
We're used to Don Draper cheating on his missus.
Yep.
But this didn't happen then at the tail end of the 90s. This was new. And it's a huge credit to HBO for being willing to put this show on the air in the first place. And it's everything we love now has been birthed from this show.
It's making me just want to... I'm sitting here now going, am I going to commit to it? Because it's a hell of a commitment.
Yeah.
But it's the best TV of all time.
It's fabulous.
So I'm just like, I never knew when the right time was to revisit it.
Yeah.
I'm quite excited about the prospect of all these essays and how they relate.
They're great.
Yeah.
They're great.
It sounds great.
And rewatching the show as well.
It must be
it's been a few years, but it's so good. I mean, it's one of the best dramas of all time. It's incredibly funny, even though it's a drama. There's so much humor in it. But I just watch it and I just get hungry because they eat a lot. They're always eating baked ziti and gabagool and all this great food. And my stomach is groaning every episode.
I'm hungry now.
On Hannibal when he's cooking, not the human, but when he's cooking, I'm always like, Mads, make me a meal.
No, but Hannibal is basically food porn.
Yeah.
There are bits when he's preparing these lavish meals and you're salivating and then you remember, oh yeah, that's human.
Yeah,
that's a finger.
Do you know what, though? Fuck it, I'd have
it.
Yeah,
it looks good. So I'm all about this book, The Soprano Sessions by Seppenwolen Zeitz, and I'm all about the show.
So what's your thoughts right now on his son playing the part of Tony in the next sort of a one-off spin-off film?
Well, I believe it's a theatrical film. It's called The Many Saints of Newark. And it's going to, as you said, it casts James Gandolfini's real son as him, as the character Tony Soprano. Now, I don't think he's going to be a particularly main character. I think it's going to, there's a guy called, I think his name's Alessandro Nivola, has been cast as Dickie Moltisanti, who is the character Chrissy Moltisanti's dad. John Bernthal has been cast, but they haven't revealed who John Bernthal's playing yet. I'm guessing he's going to be playing Johnny Boy Soprano, Tony's dad.
Oh my lord.
What's her name? Vera Farmiga.
Yeah,
she's been cast in it as well, and they haven't revealed who her character
is
going to be. But my guess is she's going to be Livia Soprano, Tony's mum.
Oh,
so the cast is looking really solid. Corey Stoll's in it as well.
He's said Corey, and I was like,
not that one. Corey Stoll's great. Again, they've not announced who he's going to be. I think he's going to be playing Uncle Junior. I cannot wait.
Oh my god, that's despicable, but I love it.
The Many Saints of Newark. No, I cannot wait.
I love the fact it's his son, his own blood. That's what he'd want.
It is great.
And even if he's not that great, it's him.
And have you seen a picture of him? He's got his dad's eyes.
He's got those
kind of hand dog. The reason why Gandolfini was so great, because even though he was this big, powerful mafia don, he just had those sad eyes.
Yeah.
And his son's got those same sad, world-weary eyes.
I miss him, man.
he was awesome. James Gandolfini rules.
Wow.
Yeah. So get this book. It's a good read.
Let's go to social media, because I saw a hell of a lot of stuff come through, as always, and I don't want to buy it all. I'm skint as it is, but there's some good stuff.
On Instagram, Charmaine Hannah has said, The Good Place Podcast.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's hosted by Mark Evan Jacobs, who plays Sean, and each week the cast and crew discuss The Good Place episode and talk theories, Easter eggs, behind-the-scenes info, etc. And she said, it's just as good as the show is.
Oh, I need to listen to this. Yeah. I finished season 3, and it brought a tear to my eye.
I've not watched it all yet.
Yeah,
so.
The last episode's a heartbreaker.
It really is.
Yeah. Don't say anything.
That's fine.
We haven't.
No,
we haven't.
Relax.
Good.
Jeez. Shelly Boots.
Give it a minute.
Next one. Daniel Turner at JoePineApple75 has said, everything you can ever possibly hope to know about the first Wu-Tang album is in the book Chamber Music, all about the Wu-Tang in 36 pieces by Will Ashen.
Wow. I need this so much
Gemma's
in my life.
Spazzing out.
Yeah.
I used to love Wu-Tang. I used to love when rap music was good. I know I just sound like a fucking old man.
No. You've got every right to say it, though.
But in the 80s and 90s, rap music was good.
Yeah, like Protect Your Neck. And...
you know, you had Wu-Tang, Onyx, N.W.A.
Oh, Beastie Boys.
Beasties, early Jay-Z.
Naughty by Nature,
Cypress Hill, man. Rap was good.
Yeah.
And now it's all this SoundCloud bleepy bloopy shit.
Trap.
Where they all just sound...
If I copy and paste what you just did over 3 minutes, we'd be number one.
Millionaires, mate. Yeah. Millionaires.
We could go to Fire Festival. Headliners. Nice.
Did you see the guy from the Fire Festival? You know, the publicity guy who was going to suck off the dude to get the water. Yeah. Apparently he's going to get his own reality show.
Good.
I'll watch it. Yeah. He was my favourite thing about that. He was so charming.
It was the line, I was prepared to suck dick. So straight.
I love that guy.
He's brilliant. I love him. Anyway, carrying on Facebook, Simon Williams has said season 2 of The Punisher, one of the best and possibly last Netflix Marvel series. Interesting characters and great action. Slightly convoluted story, but it all comes together in the end.
Not seen it.
Have you seen it yet? No. I thought it was brilliant. I didn't love the first season as much as I love John Bernthal, and he's perfectly cast as Punisher. Mm. First season was a bit barren.
I remember you saying.
But second season is badass.
Cool.
Love it.
Excellent.
On Twitter, Andrew Carr @TheAndrewCarr has said, been a massive fan of Skunk Anansie since the start, and they just released 25 Live at 25, a live album pulling tracks from the last 25 years. I've seen them tour plenty, and it's like being there, immersed in the pit with them. Hard punk, soaring ballads, just epic.
Wow, I remember Skin used to scare me when I was younger.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Only because she had so much power to her, and now it's just because she's a fucking badass.
I'm aware of them because they were, you know, they were coming up when I was first getting into music, but I never really listened to any of their stuff.
They're fantastic.
They're good, like Selling
Musically,
Jesus.
Musically, they're incredible. Week. Yeah, Week's incredible. Absolutely great band.
They do a great song on the Cruel Intentions soundtrack called Secretly.
That's Charlie Big Potato.
Yeah.
Great.
Is that one? Week as I am.
Yeah.
That's a great
that
one. Was,
that's
yeah.
the
yeah.
one
that's
I know.
That's a big one. Yeah, that was great.
Okay.
What a voice, though. She's outstanding.
She's incredible.
25 years. Fucking I feel old.
Yeah.
She's a queen.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, just going back to The Sopranos for a minute, can you believe that started 20 years ago?
Oh my lord, no.
Crazy stuff. Anyway, carrying on. Our old friend, one of our dearest and oldest listeners, Rupert Denham-Hall @Hall_business, has said, almost halfway through The Wasp Factory by the late Ian Banks, an insanely dark and biting and brilliant read.
Amazing book.
Dude, I read this at school, in English language at school, or English lit rather at school. It's fucked.
Yeah, yeah, and the ending.
The Wasp Factory is fucked, and the ending is messed up. Have you read this, dude? You don't have to read this at school.
No, I was reading Denver the Purple Dinosaur.
Of course you were.
Skip the Dog.
The Very Hungry Caterpillar.
Yeah, I haven't finished that yet. Don't spoil it.
But how could they ever, like, you know how so many books get made into films and TV? There is no way this would ever get made.
Next week it'll be announced.
It's messed up, but it's really good.
Magnificent book.
Yeah.
We've had a recommendation come through on email from Matt Cartner. He said, Conversations with a Killer, the Ted Bundy tapes on Netflix. It's absolutely insane what this one individual did, and shows how bad the justice system was back then. A captivating watch that astounded me from start to finish. I haven't watched it yet, but I think you two dudes have.
I've done the
you?
First three episodes. I've got the fourth one left to watch, but so far it's absolutely captivating. It's harrowing, and I just love the fact that they've had this for so long, and it's only now we get it. It's great.
I finished it today.
Yeah.
I need to watch some Disney, man. I need to get some balance in my life.
Get your balance back, yeah.
Yeah, it is just, it's disturbing, and I wish there was some more coverage of the victims because, of course, they are just a number now. Even you'll find out a lot of them weren't even identified, but bloody hell, this will chill your blood.
I'm one of those weirdos who really loves reading and watching things about serial killers.
Hey,
I bloody love it.
Up top.
And as much as one can have a favourite serial killer, my favourite is Ted.
No,
I do like Ted. I'm a fan. You know what I mean.
I totally know what you mean. That's the whole point of like my favourite murder podcast too. It's fascinating.
But I haven't yet watched this, but I'm looking forward as well. So this documentary was directed by, is it Joe Berlinger?
Yeah.
And he has already also directed a feature film called Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile about Ted Bundy, starring Zac Efron.
Yeah.
And I really like Zac Efron.
The pictures in the trailer were good.
Yeah.
He looks like a double. It's terrifying because I hate to say this, but the reason why Ted Bundy got away with a lot of things was because he had charm and he had good looks.
He was handsome, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
What a bastard, though.
So I am going to watch.
Fucking bastard.
I am going to watch the documentary, and I cannot wait for Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile.
I'm glad that he's doing that.
And it also has the best film title I've ever heard. I just love saying it. It just flows beautifully.
Go on, one more time.
Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile.
That's going to be my ringtone.
I can't wait to see that.
His agent must be like, right, you're a pretty boy. You've done a few comedies that are a bit out there, but you're still that little Disney guy.
Yeah.
What do you want to do now? Be the biggest serial killer ever? All right. Go
for it.
Go on then.
See what happens.
Tarnish that legacy. Go for it.
On Instagram, Drew White, a.k.a. Great White Bruce, has said, Let Me Be Frank by Frank Bruno, a harrowing read of Bruno's fight against bipolar. From heavyweight champion to mental illness patient, this book really opened my eyes as to what happens inside mental health facilities, mostly for the worst.
Bless him.
Sounds like a pretty dark read.
His stories, I remember he was on a lot of talk shows a few years ago talking about his battle with mental illness. My God, this guy's really gone through it. He's a hero.
It's a shame, man. He was the damn champ.
Bless him.
Yeah. Santoka at Santoka has said, Sex Education on Netflix is very good. That's the one with Gillian Anderson, isn't it? All right. I've not watched it, but I've heard a lot of good things. My friend Luke, who listens to the show, he texted me about it, said he's been enjoying it. It's meant to be very good. And they've just renewed it for season two as well.
They have, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'll give it a watch at some point.
Give that a go.
I love Netflix, too much. But someone told me the other day to watch, what's the one with the dark, sinister guy?
You.
Yes.
So there's about 12 of them.
Yeah.
There's this brand new one we just talked about.
Russian Doll. It's very good. We've got this.
There's so much.
Too much.
You know what I mean?
Too much content.
Yeah.
On Instagram, Grievous04 said, Rival Sun's new album, Feral Roots, is tremendous. Rock musicians on top of their craft. This might be their most complete album to date. I don't know any of Rival Sun's work. Do either of you?
No. We saw them at Download, I think.
Did we?
We walked past. I think they're on the main stage.
Okay.
But I think they clashed with someone else.
Right.
But they're quite good. They're very musically talented. They're not my cup of tea, but what they were doing was very good.
There you go. Check that out.
Yeah.
And then finally on Facebook, Daniel Turner has said, Gemma, get ready for this.
I'm ready.
Get ready to flip, mate. The book Miyazaki World by Susan Napier. Yeah. Both a superbly interesting biography of Hayao Miyazaki and an analysis of all his films from The Castle of Cagliostro to The Wind Rises.
I can get my security code right now. I need to get that down.
Literally within 30 seconds of reading this tweet, I bought the book.
No.
Nice.
Yeah. I did not know it existed and I was all over it. I haven't started reading it yet.
Yeah.
Once I've done my Sopranos binge,
I'll get on this. I'm going to be all over that like chocolate spread on toast.
You come up with some fucking weird sayings, girl.
It's because I'm a fucking weird girl.
You know, you can go to the studios. They've built like a sort of theme park or something. Mm-hmm.
They're going to. It's not open until a few years. There's a world already built.
And there's that's where they got the cat bus and stuff like that. Darren, who listens, got me the program from there.
Nice.
And I'll bring it for you guys to look at. It's amazing. I don't know what the fuck it's on about. Obviously, it's not in English. But the pictures and everything. I'll bring it next episode.
Awesome.
It's beautiful.
I'm dying. I really want to go there on opening day. I really do.
We'll go.
Yay.
If you're listening, sort us out. Free press passes. Yeah. We'll review it for you. Flights, accommodation, food. I'm up for that.
Yeah. Give us everything that we want.
Yeah.
For free.
20 grand.
That'll be fine.
I'll
pay you with tears.
I thought you say tits. I'll pay you with tits. That wouldn't have
been
right.
No, that's your currency.
Let's just get back on. Stop.
Yes, but thank you very much for all of your suggestions. Please keep sending them in on Twitter at STTE Podcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or on email podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. And we need to hurry this up because the Super Bowl's coming on soon. I need you to get the fuck out of my house.
Yep.
Go Rams.
Go Rams. Yeah, fuck you, Patriots. People will be listening to this a week after it's happened. So please, for the love of Christ, let the Rams have won because I hate the Patriots. They are the 90s Man United of American football.
Great.
And I despise them.
I don't want to upset any listeners, so I'm saying nothing right now.
Fuck them.
Sports to win.
Go sports.
I support the referee.
Gimp.
Anywho, what we got coming up on the next episode? What's our main review, Mark?
It is the one and only Lego Movie Part 2.
I'm really looking forward to it.
It should be good fun.
The first one was tremendous, wasn't it?
Shits and giggles.
Shits and giggles indeed. Yeah.
Everything is awesome and everything is cool when you're part of a team.
Correct. And we prove that every bloody fortnight, don't you, kids?
It's true.
Big time. Our topic of conversation is going to be our top three acting debuts. Bit of research, bit of work, more than usual, I think. So, you know, put a bit of graft in, but I think it'll
be good. Can we not do that again? Let's just do, like, top three cartoons or something.
Don't be lazy.
It takes a lot of work.
Come on.
I mean, have to, like, Google and click IMDb now.
Just don't
Two clicks rather than one.
Don't muck about.
They muck about.
They muck about.
Sit at the captain's table.
Gemma.
Yeah.
What is our rewatch?
It's going to be Filth. Filth, starring James McAvoy.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, I was inspired by our Glass episode, and I'm very excited to see what... Well, I know that Ben's watched it,
I have.
But Mark hasn't watched it.
No.
So I'm really excited to see what we all have to bring to the table.
Mark has watched a lot of Filth,
but not this particular film.
That's Red Tube.
Dirty.
Can we get free... But it is free, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's no good to us. There's no point plugging
it. Can we get free porn?
We're going to be masturbating over, you know.
There we go.
There we go.
Masturbating over Martin Scorsese.
Oh, my good God.
Hot damn.
I think that might be the hardest yet for you.
literally.
Yeah, there's like 10 yeah. I can pick from.
That's good.
I might just put them in a hat and pick one out, because what the fuck?
Lazy.
Why not?
So
yeah, yeah. It's exactly the same thing.
But it will
thing.
Be one. I'm really looking forward to it, because there's so much to choose from.
Of course. Mm. We're going to give away a metric fuck ton of prizes. We're going to have a new bunch of recommendations. And more importantly, we've got a brand new game.
It's going to be good.
Mark gave you a huge clue, the fact that there's not going to be a Games Master.
Yeah.
What could it
mean?
Wow.
What could that mean?
Oh,
could it mean that there's a robot involved who's going to be doing it? Who knows?
What if it's not even a game, it's just the concept of a game?
What if there's just 10 minutes of silence? Wow. Just dead air. It's an art piece.
Oh my God.
People would be like, it's the best you've ever done. Did you ever watch Games Master?
Of course.
All the time.
Brilliant. Yeah. Why did it go away?
Probably because Patrick Moore died.
Oh, but there was still Dominic
Diamond.
Dominic Diamond. He was a legend.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say this now. The game show is a lot of fun.
Yes.
And that's what we're here for.
We finally got to the end of that.
Yes. Thank you.
Jesus
Christ. I need to go and have a long lie down before the game starts. See you in 2 weeks.